This is too good to stop. It's just too good to stop, this song. Let's keep playing it. I like it.
You should always let the music establish. You are
let
very
the music
quick.
Play.
I've got the music in me.
Sure.
You jump on it because you're very eager to get on.
Sure.
You're an eager beaver, you are.
4 hours isn't enough. We want more. And, you know.
Speak for yourself.
A quick congratulations. Hi, by the way. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. You already know that. A quick congratulations to both the White Sox and the Cubs for starting out the 2016 season the right way. Both teams winners in California last night. If they keep up at this pace, I did the math. The White Sox would be 162-0, and the Cubs would be 162-0. That's normally enough to win your division. So I'm hoping both teams continue to just do nothing but win.
You are optimistic.
Yeah, unrealistically optimistic, I would say, because you don't see a lot of teams go undefeated.
I would like to congratulate Artemi Panarin, who has gotten two back-to-back games when he scored 4 points in each of them.
Right.
Hashtag foreplay.
Right. I wonder what else has that hashtag.
Oh,
he
hashtag
was the NHL's number one star of the month.
Uh-huh.
So good for him.
He's cute, the bread man.
You know what? Here's what I like most about him. And there's a lot to like about him, but here's what I like most. He just seems to always be having a good time. When he scores a goal, he hugs who's ever near him. Sometimes the player on the other team who gets the hug isn't appreciative of that hug. You know, you always hope it's a Blackhawk who's near him that it gets the hug, but sometimes it'll be a player from St. Louis or Minnesota, and, you know, it's hard to turn down a good hug.
You got to love a hugger.
You do. But he seems like, I don't know if you ever in your life had a moment where you go, boy, I would love to play professional sports. I've had that moment. I'm not good enough to do it, but I always thought if I played pro sports, like every minute you'd be going, this is incredible. I play professional sports, you know? So he seems to embody that on the ice. He's so enthusiastic and exuberant. I love that.
And he gets serious, definitely, but he does seem like it's fun. He just looks like a 12-year-old boy who's having a blast.
Always. When he scores or when he's part of a unit that scores a goal, you just see this giant smile on his face and you go, why doesn't every player in every sport have that kind of feeling? I just hit a home run. I just scored a touchdown. I just scored a goal. He has that. I love that about him.
So the football players have their stupid dances.
Yeah, there's that. And sometimes they get penalized if it's too much. The league cracked down on that a couple of years ago, excessive celebrating. When I was at the game on Sunday, this is my favorite penalty in all of sports. And I've only seen it called a couple of times. It's very rare that somebody calls this, but when it does, it always makes me sit up and go, wow, that's a penalty. The penalty of embellishment.
Yeah. Dennis Rodman used to get that all the time.
Embellishment. That's the league's way of saying you're overacting. We know you're overacting.
Quit hot dogging.
We've got a game to play.
I like it.
I don't remember who it was the other day on Sunday during the hockey game got a call of embellishment, but I just went, you really have to overdo it for a ref to go, all right, I've seen a lot of stuff, but that, you sit down and behave yourself for 2 minutes. We can't have that.
I don't remember who it was, but when you start spinning around on the ice like they do in the ice capades, that is embellishment.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I wonder how they don't get dizzy and they go so quickly in a little circle, but...
Was there a Hamill Camel involved?
Yes, there's always a Hamill Camel involved.
Wasn't she cute, Dorothy Hamill, with the wedge haircut?
Yeah. Yes, she
Where
was.
Where is she now?
I don't know. You want to throw out a challenge to Kevin?
Get Dorothy
Kevin,
Hamill.
Kevin, we want Dorothy Hamill on by the end of today's show.
All right. John Travolta, too.
Do you know who Dorothy Hamill is? Be honest.
Yeah.
No Googling.
She's the daughter of the Hamill parents.
Yep. He knew.
He has no idea.
He knew.
Isn't that cute?
Is she behind Hamill Woods and Joliet?
No.
And not the Hamill Family Play Center at Brookfield Zoo.
No.
Not behind that either.
She was an Olympian when you were busy, again, not being born.
Oh, yeah. Well, I should have known that.
She was a figure skater.
Short and sassy. That was her haircut.
Yes.
I think it was the shampoo she hawked, too.
What was the company? There was some company.
Smart and Sassy.
Is that who it was?
I think so.
Yeah. That's right.
She had that. It was a wedge haircut. That's what they called it, where it was kind of stacked in the back, and it was really.
Oh,
she's
yeah, that. Okay, that Dorothy Hamill.
That Dorothy Hamill, Kev, yeah.
With the short stack.
Yeah. Now, remind me, did other women, because I don't remember this at all, did other women who admired her and her haircut, did they follow suit and get their haircut like her?
Absolutely. It was the first Rachel.
Oh, yeah.
because Jennifer Aniston's Rachel Shag, which right. I still kind of have. I love that haircut.
Although the Farrah Fawcett haircut preceded that.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So that might have been... And actually, Jacqueline Onassis, to some extent, kind of...
Helmet head?
It was the helmet head haircut.
It was very stylish.
They called it the helmet head.
Very stylish. Yeah. And women did try and copy that. Absolutely.
It always looked better with the pillbox hat
as
an accessory.
Did she keep her pills in
the
box?
Yeah, her pills were, they would show her from time to time if she had a headache or something like that. She'd reach in, she'd scoop in the top of the hat and pull out an Excedrin. And then she felt better. They would show that sometimes.
What was the, it's time for an Excedrin or reach for an Excedrin? What was
right.
it?
Right, and she did. Reach for an Excedrin, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and she had it in her hat.
It's very good idea. I should start wearing a pillbox hat.
She also kept vitamin C tablets behind, like you'd see her, depending on what pills she needed, there were different parts of the hat that she would press, and they would dispense the pills.
That's high tech for back then.
Right. For the early 1960s.
Wow.
Today we see that and we don't even blink. We go, well, sure, it's 2016. Hats are pill dispensers now, but back then, that was the first.
Wow.
It changed the world.
Canhead should do something with that.
Our friend Canhead? Yeah, he should. All right, we're going to we'll take a quick break. And how could you not after this opening? You got to rest. And then provide more afterwards. So stick around if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. The first time I ever saw you perform, you were Nancy Nasal Passage in a kids' production of The Sound of Mucus. I'll never forget that. I was a kid. Our school took a field trip, and we saw you perform, and you were magnificent.
Thank you very much.
You were so good.
It's very difficult for me because I never saw The Sound of Music.
Right.
And this, of course, was a takeoff.
It was a parody of it, but boy, was that a fun show. I know you're operating on next to no sleep, correct?
Yeah, I just was up late. It's okay. We don't have to bring it on the air.
You didn't sleep much. You only had like five minutes of sleep.
I was up late. There was a load of laundry. This is bad. This is bad. Michael came home from Ireland 2 weeks ago.
Almost 2 weeks.
There was a basket of stuff from his suitcase that was not washed, and we thought everything was all. We were all caught up.
Oh.
Because there were folded items on top. Because you know when you go on vacation and you don't wear some stuff.
Right.
So
I say I could still wear that. I brought it with me on vacation. It traveled with me, but I didn't wear it. I could still wear it now.
I wouldn't wear it. You have to wash
what's
been in the suitcase.
Yeah, all right.
But it was folded on top of the basket, so we thought it was clean clothes, and it wasn't. And
right.
Michael needs his dress clothes for choir concert tonight, so I had to stay up and do that. And then I got stuck watching everybody's take on The Walking Dead.
Oh, online you were reading people's opinions of what happened?
Yeah. I'm writing a letter to AMC.
Saying what?
It was too brutally violent, and I might give up the show.
But a show that's based on flesh-eating zombies is going to more times than not be violent. You know that.
I know.
You'd be disappointed if you watched a show with that.
This was terrible. And plus, you know, you bring us into the family of Alexandria, and we love these characters, and it hurts too much.
To lose one of them?
The biggest thing is we don't know who it is.
We don't know.
And we have to wait till October. What will I do?
Well, laundry.
Yeah, no, I'm caught up.
Do some laundry in the interim. Did you see this guy? This is I can kind of picture this because I've driven, I don't know if you've had this opportunity when you drive in California, depending on where you are, you know how in movies sometimes you'll see a scene where somebody's driving in California and they're on like those windy roads on cliffs? Did you ever see any of that? Like there'll be a guy, sometimes it's in a chase, and it's just a windy road around cliffs, and you go, "What? If all that guy had to do is just drive a little bit off, he would just go down the cliff and he'd get killed."
And Grace Kelly did. That's what I think of when she was
going. Is that where she died, on a cliff?
She was driving along in these cliffs.
Yeah, listen to this story. A man who nearly... I'll give you a good example. There's a mountain in California called Mount Baldy, it's called.
I've heard of it.
And we've been there a couple of times, and you like the whole ride up, it's so nerve-wracking because you're just inches away from the edge of the road, you know? And there's a lot of quick hairpin turns, and you say, boy, 6 inches that way, and I go down the cliff. And they've got like a little, like a guardrail.
That's not going to help your car from going over.
Nope.
Maybe if you're going 1 mile an hour.
I was getting honked at a lot because I was driving with people who lived there and were used to driving on that road, that mountainous road, and I was not. I wasn't going 1 mile an hour. But
two.
I was around there.
Yeah, but you know, the people who claim they know it can still...
Sure.
For, I mean, a split second.
Yep.
You look away, you change the radio
right.
station, you do something.
I wouldn't
Gonski.
Do it. You know, we've talked about how people now, they just text as part of their driving. I'd be so afraid now, like the last time I did it, no one knew how to, they didn't have texting yet. But now,
yeah.
if you're driving by somebody and they're texting,
yeah,
because
they
over.
Come in your lane and then right. you're going to have to pull over and the guardrail's
it's
not going to save you.
You're done. A man who nearly drove off of a California cliff was struck with a second round of bad luck when authorities say he escaped his vehicle. And I've seen pictures of this car. It's like teetering. It almost went off the cliff. He escaped his vehicle only to be hit by a passing tour bus just moments later.
Boy, that was a good tour. And over on the right? Whoops.
Was a guy from San Bernardino. The unidentified driver was winding along Malibu's Canyon Road on Saturday. I've been on that road, too. I know that road. That's treacherous.
Which one is that?
It's in Malibu, California. It's called Malibu Canyon Road. It's near where Johnny Carson used to live.
I think I've been there, too.
It's like a series of turns that are just, you know, we talked to like a week ago, 2 weeks ago about the old S-curve. It's like that, only with mountains and cliffs.
And a complete huge plummet if you miss.
If you miss it, yep. All right. The unidentified driver was winding along Malibu's Canyon Road on Saturday evening when he crashed through the guardrail, the Lost Hills Sheriff Station had reported. A rattling photo, it's the picture I'm talking about, shows his SUV hanging over the edge with both back tires raised up in the air. You look at it and you go, boy, a couple more inches that way or that way, and that car goes down that cliff.
Teeter-totter.
That's what it is. It's human teeter-totter bread and water. After exiting, and I'm almost positive that lyric is only in there because it rhymes.
Right, why would you do it?
Even if you teeter-tottered for an hour solid, you don't go, boy, could I use some bread and water right about now. I'm famished. After exiting the vehicle, authorities said the driver became disoriented. And I would say thankful at that point because you go, I came within inches of losing my life. I'm disoriented, but thankful. Boy, could I go for some bread and water. He then walked into a path of an oncoming bus. They described him as conscious and breathing.
Oh, he lived?
Well, yeah. Luckily, upon first responders' arrival and said he was then transported to a local hospital for treatment, the sheriff's station credited the road's guardrail. The same guardrail that I said would not save your life did save his life, which the driver completely smashed through with likely slowing his vehicle just enough to save his life. I think that's probably the role of the guardrail in these situations is to not fully stop you, but slow you down enough to where hopefully, like in this guy's case, your car doesn't plummet down the cliff.
Did he miss the guardrail or it fell off?
He hit it.
Because there's no guardrail where the car...
Yeah, after he hit it, it died. It perished. It
well,
went
and
down.
That's okay. But you know how sometimes they have guardrails, but there's like a space in between them. Wouldn't
yeah.
that be his luck to hit the
yes.
spot where there's no
yes.
space?
Because the state of California was saving money by not putting up guardrails everywhere. Definitely a key fortunate driver was saved by these barriers. It said this is another reminder of the need to drive safely through the canyons of this beautiful area and to use extreme caution at the scene of any traffic collision. It really is. I mean, people always say life is a game of inches. This guy twice, I guess, cheated death. What's that movie where all these kids, is it Final Destination, where these kids just keep narrowly missing death? Some of them don't, spoiler alert, but most of them do. Some of them do. This guy's whole life. Well, not his whole life, but that day, that night, that's what he had, two near misses. And I like people who, if you have a day like this, I always go, if I were you, I'd play the lottery. If I was him, I would lay in bed and lock the door and not go anywhere. Forget the lottery. It's not your day. All right, a quick break. Steve has the news and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Bridget Carey will join us in about 12 to 15 minutes for Tech Tuesday. This is a story we didn't get to yesterday, but I was reminded of it because of the story we just talked about the guy with the car almost going over the cliff and then getting hit by the bus. You never know. I mean, no matter what happens, no matter where you are, any time of day or night, something crazy could happen and you could get injured. I'm sure you saw the video of the Philadelphia Flyers fans who were leaving Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia after a hockey game, and the escalator that they were traveling on, you know, if you're in the upper deck seats, you have a couple options, and one of the options is to take an escalator down. And the escalator somehow sped up. It went faster than an escalator is supposed to go. And then what happened was it created this like chain reaction of all these people on the escalator as people at the front kind of fell forward, and then other people, as they were trying to get off, they fell on them. And it looks impossible when you're watching it. You go, I've been seeing escalators my whole life. I've never seen anything quite like this.
Well, not everybody is athletically inclined and have laser speed reaction time like you do. Because you would be blaming the one person who fell, who tripped off the whole domino theory. Because if someone's on the ground, unless you're like leaping over them.
Well, there's one guy who they show who does exactly that. He looks in front and sees there's a pileup.
You could play him in the made-for-TV movie.
If they do a made-for-TV movie, that's the role I'm reading for, because he quickly goes, well, this isn't going to end well. And then it looks like he leaves his girlfriend or his wife there on the escalator as he jumps off the side of it. But it came to that.
Yeah.
Are you watching watching the video?
He did. He did a side jump over the railing.
Right.
And that was smart.
In all the escalator safety classes I've ever taken, they always tell you that's your best move, even though it seems.
Who has told you that? And who teaches them? It's not Otis.
No.
That's elevators.
Right. He only handles elevators. But they always say in an extreme situation where there is, they call it a pileup, in those situations what you want to do is you want to go off the side of the elevator, not contribute to the pileup. Now, when I first saw this video, I didn't realize, because you can't tell that the escalator is speeding up.
It is hauling ass.
It's going really fast.
Really fast.
It's going very fast. Is there a setting on escalators that you can determine various speeds? Because everyone I've ever been on, it's always the same pace, always.
And I still have to look where, you know, the little ledge is, because otherwise I'm going to be turned into bread.
Well, right. Well, they have, on all escalators, the edge of the stair is either yellow or red, as if to say to you,
look out.
This is the point by which you need to step up. You've been on an escalator that is stopped, and you have to walk up it or down it, and for some reason, those first few steps
are hard.
Impossible to navigate.
But they're also, like, large. They're a large step.
Right.
The riser, I guess. I don't know what it's called.
Well, I can't determine, is it because it's large, is it higher up than most steps, or is it wider? Because everybody has a hard time navigating those first three or four steps. It's like, oh, I've never walked up steps before. What do I do now?
It seems like it's a bigger step than your average stair riser.
Right.
And the fact that it's all blending in, it's an optical illusion. That's
right.
Why your first couple steps are difficult, because even though you see it's not working, I got to jump on it, the ridges blend in with the floor.
The silvery ridges.
Yeah. It just takes me like two steps, and then you get the rhythm going and everything's fine.
I can't figure that out, because after I've done it, after I navigate it, and I go, oh, okay, it works like stairs. I'll put one foot up, then one foot
one
up,
foot
then one
in front
foot
of
right.
The other.
But those first few, and it's not just me, because I'll look at other people and they're like, oh, what do I do now?
It's just a weird situation. It's it really is an optical illusion.
It is. Yeah.
And if the stair steps, if it stops and the stair is only halfway there, then the first step is smaller than the next one. So just getting started, you know, we're getting old now.
Yep. There's that.
Just jump off the side.
That's what I do now. Even if the escalator isn't having a mishap, I just, you know, very Tarzan-like of me, I will jump over the side. I used to be so afraid of, and I don't know if other kids had this fear, especially at Marshall Fields for some weird reason, the one downtown, because we'd go there every year at Christmas, and I'd be so afraid of either forgetting to get off at the top or somehow, like, going underneath.
Right, that's when you get turned into bread.
You see, right, in
the
bread area.
The laser beam.
That green glowy light.
Yeah.
I'd get mesmerized by the green glowy light. And then that happened somewhere in Asia.
We saw
that.
That
little kid got sucked up into the escalator.
You're a little obsessed with escalator mishaps. Do you know that?
Yeah. I'm working on a TV series based on that. I hope to have that ready by the fall. Because it's fascinating to me, all the weird mishaps. Because you just go, all it is stairs going up and down. What's the worst that could happen? But we see what the worst could happen. It's insanity.
Somebody had a terrible escalator mishap, so don't laugh. John?
I won't.
Someone in your family had an escalator mishap?
Yes, my name, Bill. I took my niece and nephew some years ago to Water Tower for Christmas time. And, you know, kids kind of get away with you once in a while. I think he was 8, she was 10. And he's going up the escalator at Water Tower, and in the middle are those planters, you know, the big planter boxes.
Yeah.
I think they put plastic up now, but before there wasn't. And I wasn't paying attention. He had one of those little, we call them Eskimo jackets, the one that had the big fur outside it. They're real big jackets.
Parkas.
And
right?
Parkas, yeah. I guess Northsiders would call them parkas. We call them
Eskimo jackets. All right, sure.
Or survival jackets.
Sure.
Back right. in the 70s.
So his coat got kind of caught in the rubber gripping of where the handle's at, and then his palm of his hand got wedged at the planter.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
See, right?
When I look back, you just see his hand, like, just bouncing. And before I could get to him, it just snapped.
He broke his arm.
And he broke his arm really bad, and then I took the jacket off to look at his arm, and I could hold his wrist in his hand one way while his arm was pointing
the
other way.
No.
Oh, my God.
And he just let... I mean, he was screaming like he wouldn't believe. Security was really cool. There was some lady there to help me. It all turned out all right, you know. And, you know, to get a settlement from Otis and all that. But it was just, I never thought anything like that could happen on a, you know.
Is he afraid now? Like anytime you need to go somewhere and there's an escalator involved, is he a little reticent to go on it? I would be.
Let's put it this way. He keeps his hand inside the rail.
Sure.
See, that is a teaching lesson right there. Now, who was it, your brother or sister's kid, and how pissed were they?
It was my sister's kid, and I never heard the end of it.
Yeah.
Some years later, I started a fire in their fireplace and almost burned down a house. So I'm like the uncle that always messes stuff up.
Uncle Black Sheep.
That's you.
That's my name. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
You've seen kids do this thing. I don't know what's in it for kids to do this, but I used to do this. You either stand at the top or the bottom of the escalator, and as the handrail goes by, you move it with your hands.
Right, because you want to feel like you have superpower strength and you're moving it like a giant rubber band. It's just fun.
I don't know why that appeals to kids, but
I remember. Kids, I saw you do it the other day.
I still do it. I love doing it. All right, a quick break. More show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You know what that music means, Bill.
Bridget Carey's nearby.
It is a Tech Tuesday. She is a CNET senior editor and the host of the CNET Update. Bridget, what is going?
Oh, so much is going. Everything's about the streams these days, at least today. There's a lot of news about different things on streaming.
Like, for instance?
Okay, for instance, Twitter now will stream NFL games.
Really?
On Thursdays. Well, it's really just a handful of Thursday night football games. Out of the blue, kind of a surprise, they made a deal to be a streaming partner. Now, you can still watch the games on major television networks, but when it comes to streaming on the computer, Twitter got the deal for that for a few games. Also, the other day we heard something about Yahoo streaming some Major League Baseball games. They're going to pick one every so often to just stream for free. Of course, it might not be the team you want to watch, but, you know, that said, you're seeing more of these tech companies try to be the home for sports.
But, Bridget, what if an NFL game goes more than 140 characters? What will they have to do? You might only get the first 8 seconds of the game. That's not enough.
Well, now, who owns Periscope? Because when it was that big
Twitter.
Floyd Mayweather fight,
yeah,
we didn't want to pay the money to get it. So we went to Periscope and watched it. And it was really funny because there were drunk guys that were just they were just recording it from their phone on their TV. And you saw them do shots after every round. So by the end of the fight, it was kind of sideways and it was hard to see the fight. But we got to watch it for free and it was fun.
Oh. Huh.
I did the same thing, actually. And, okay, so Twitter owns Periscope, and they are incorporating Periscope into this. They're having some pregame commentary of their own that will be, you know, pushed out. If you're following things on Twitter, you'll be like, oh, jump on Periscope and watch the pregame or watch the behind-the-scenes stuff. So, yeah, they're definitely encouraging people to kind of, you know, have their phone in their hand, even if they're watching the television for the game, because it's more comfortable sometimes. At least they'll still be like on Periscope with their phone.
That's
not a bad idea. I can't think it'll be long. I know this is just limited Thursday night games, but at some point they're going to realize, let's put the whole NFL schedule on Twitter, wouldn't they? They don't have anything to lose in that.
Oh, this is like another baby step. I mean, we keep seeing over and over again, Facebook and Twitter, like, make little bits of progress and going, hey, sports fans, come to our network, chat about the game live here. And really, Twitter is the great place for live talk compared to Facebook, because you can see something a day old and not really know what someone's talking about. So people like Twitter for sports, and it's just another push they're making, because they think that is where they can grow.
I do a lot of Blackhawks game tweeting because it's just fun to do while you're playing along because it's so instant. I love it. Maybe you could answer the Facebook dilemma that Bill and I have. People will have died years ago, and then a celebrity will die that day, and all of a sudden, like, an old death pops up, and it just pops into somebody's feed, and then you wake up and you're like, oh my God, Lucille Ball died.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's been dead for many years.
How does that reach the top of the list again all of a sudden?
That actually happened to me on another news story today on Facebook.
See? Someone shared a you gotta video, check and, the
and,
date.
And it said, yeah, and it fooled me almost. It was like, on this day, on 1981, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, oh, hey, whoa, this happened? No, that in January it happened.
Right.
But you don't always check the date. So, you know, it is something we have to now kind of be conscientious of checking before we share and look like, you know, we're idiots, because, you know, that's now part of the social game, right?
Do you remember there were two kids that were lost on a raft somewhere in Miami? Not a raft, they had a boat. And I was really worried about these kids. And as days were going by, I'm like, this is not looking good. They're not going to find them. And then I find this story. It was just on the internet. It wasn't even on Facebook. And it's like, two boys lost at sea were found. So I posted it. And boy, did people ream me a new one, because it's like, this was from 5 years ago. They're not the same kids. So then I took it down and felt like a jerk. Check the date is all I got to tell you.
Yeah, I'll tell you how to mess with people. People would troll their friends by going on a post that said, like say your friend a year ago said, I graduated college or something, you know, something big. Or if you make a comment on that photo or that status update again, years later, suddenly those similar friends get a notification, and then people start going, congratulations again. And then that person now has like they're, you know, there are people just going through, oh, congratulations, yeah, congratulations. And suddenly, you know, you gave birth again or you graduated again. and you can't stop it from going in everyone's feed, because the more congratulations you get, the more it keeps spreading.
That's beautiful.
But that's how the dead people come back to life, because somebody posts something on an older post and then it goes in the news feed.
Right.
You've just solved the problem, Bridget.
Yep, there you go.
You're a genius, you know that? you really are. I've been looking at a new Toyota Highlander because it's really kick-ass and cool. And plus, I like Jan from Toyota. I would like to be her friend.
Oh.
And Toyota and Microsoft are hooking up for a pretty cool thing. Bill, you're worried about losing your keys. You may not need your keys to get into your car. Is that true, Bridget?
Well, that's what they're working on. But if you could just, you know, open the door with a smile.
Seriously.
This may creep out some people. It kind of makes me wonder how it could work. But what they're doing is experimental technology for the future vehicles. And you already have a rear view camera for when you're backing out. What if you're approaching your car, your hands are full of groceries or luggage or something, the camera face scans you, so like it can identify that it is really you, the owner, walking up, sees that your hands are full, and, you know, pops open the back for you. Of course, you have to wonder, wait, how does that work if you have like different facial hair, different days, or like you have an evil twin? I don't know how this all works.
Here's what I'm concerned about, Bridget, because if I'm blonde, so I have really light eyelashes, so if I like to wear a lot of dark eye makeup. If I don't have makeup on, I look like James Spader, quite honestly.
Right.
So if James Spader would walk up to my Toyota.
He could steal your Toyota.
Yes.
James Spader could steal your car.
These are valid concerns right now. If you do, you have to worry about Spader and also others. No, if you check out where we are right now in facial recognition, Microsoft has a lot of these things online where it's like, scan your face, see how old you are. Scan your face. What kind of dog do you look like? Like, they're really experimenting a lot now on being able to identify you. On one hand, you can unlock a computer. On another hand, they're just trying to like grow their algorithms by having a lot of people play games so they can learn more about faces. And That said, yeah, when I don't have makeup on, suddenly my results are completely different. And I think there's a lot of kinks to work out before we get to that point. But that said, this isn't the only thing they're working on. Toyota and Microsoft are working on having cars relay data on the road. So there's a thing up ahead that's blocking the road. What if the car that sensed it first sent that data to another car on the road way back, and then they get the warning to avoid it? Or you're approaching the airport and it can tell you, hey, there's more parking in this lot than the other lot.
Wow.
You can save yourself time. So although cars being connected have their downsides, they do have their positives. Like, oh, where did I park? Oh, right, my car is internet connected and it remembered exactly where I parked and it's on my app.
All right, I like that.
It's happening fast. Bridget, what's coming up on the CNET Daily Update?
We're also talking about a new Roku streaming stick that just was announced today. So if you want to get something to stream all the good Netflix and whatnots, and you're looking for something in a good price range, it has a high review. It's $50. So
wow.
Check that out.
Affordable.
Totally.
Very affordable.
Well, thank you so much, Bridget.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a good rest of the week. Guys. It's Bridget Carey from the CNET Daily Update, the senior editor over at CNET. We'll take a quick break. And then some news from Steve. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, my monthly friend is here. And no, I don't mean Flo.
You've been waiting all morning to say that.
I've been waiting
That's
Wendy
right.
doesn't
all
use that
month.
On anybody but you, Mike. I hope you feel special. Do you?
Specialish.
Yeah.
Specialish.
Good. Mike McNamara is here. He's the director of programming
and
for
when
the
does
Midwest.
He come in to visit us?
Once a month.
All right.
Once a month.
Every first Tuesday.
That's right. And
like clockwork.
Yeah,
like clockwork.
He's the director of programming, or was, until they heard this, for the Midwest Independent Film Fest.
That's right. No longer with them.
He's brought Brad Besser, the director of Beaver Trilogy Part 4. Welcome aboard. Nice to have you, Brad.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Wendy hasn't seen this, and I haven't seen the original trilogy, Beaver Trilogy, but you don't have to enjoy Part 4. I know that sounds convoluted and fake, but it's true.
You don't. The film is going to give you all that you need. It is a confusing... The movie, the Beaver Trilogy, the original Beaver Trilogy, is a confusing idea. But Beaver Trilogy Part 4 is going to make it very easy to digest.
Puts it all together kind of like The Godfather did when they put all the movies together in chronological order. Is that how this is or no?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Just like that.
It's exactly
just
like that.
Well, we watched the trailer and I am confused, but it draws me in and I'm completely intrigued and I want to know about the beaver guy.
And I would say that's how it was when I saw the film, and all my friends that are saying, what is Beaver Trilogy Part? What is this about? I said, don't look it up. Don't try to figure it out. Just come out and enjoy this film. It's a great film. It's had its world premiere out at Sundance. Went to Hot Docs, which is
Congrats,
one of the premier
doc
fests in the world. And we're thrilled to be hosting the Chicago premiere right here at the Midwest Independent Film Festival. But if you're hearing Beaver Trilogy, because it's naturally, you're like, let's Google it. Let's this and that. And you can do that, but I would say... see it the way I saw it.
Go in
which
blind.
Is just show up, walk in, go in blind. It's a great film.
What if you want a little brief synopsis? Is that fair to set up a little something, Brad?
Whew. I mean, how long do we have?
Exactly. That's what people have asked me, and I've just gone, whew, well.
Yeah, let's see. Do I have my elevator pitch? It has...
is there intrigue?
It's got superstars. It's got some star power.
We got
which we're Sean not gonna,
Penn. Right, we got Crispin Glover. We yep. got Bill Hader.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Three of the most unique individuals ever.
And that's what I was shooting for. Yeah.
So and we're not going to tell you how they made their way into this film. It's going to all make sense when you get there. This is your only chance to see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
It's the Chicago premiere. Brad actually studied film here in Chicago.
At Columbia
guy.
College,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Chicago.
I went there for film as well, and it was good when I went there, but over the last 20 some odd years, it's become really a formidable player, hasn't it,
absolutely.
In terms of schooling to make movies.
Yeah, I mean, probably the best example is my good friend Jordan Vogt Roberts, who was in my beginning classes, is now directing the next King Kong movie.
Not bad.
So he's in
Skull Island.
Skull Island, which is, you know, $120 million movie. So,
and by the way, we had the Chicago premiere of his film Kings of Summer.
Yeah.
Which was shot in Ohio. And Jordan's a Detroit and Chicago guy. Incredible film. It premiered out at Sundance and ultimately led to Skull Island.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's just one example of a lot of people. You know, they're meeting each other, they're putting their brains together, they're making some great projects, and I think, you know, maybe for the first time, Columbia is really being recognized on a much larger scale.
Right.
In Hollywood and beyond.
Good. Well deserved. Very well deserved. You obviously are too young to have been a part of the original Beaver trilogy, but how did you become aware of it?
Well, so I know Trent, who's the director of the Beaver trilogy, and Trent's... yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry.
The look on Wendy's face is priceless.
Wait, what do you mean you're too young? How long has the Beaver thing been going on?
Don't try to sort it out.
It started in a parking lot at a television station in 1979.
Really?
And has been going until this very moment and continues.
I am completely sucked into this.
Yeah.
Don't ask any. This is it's great. That's tough to go on the radio and be like, don't ask any other questions.
This is the easiest interview. Easiest interview we've ever done.
But did you have to get permission from the original people who put the film together originally to carry out their story?
I did.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing is, so I wanted to make Beaver Trilogy Part 4, but Trent, who is the director of the Beaver Trilogy, really didn't want to talk about the Beaver Trilogy. So I had to kind of lie to him for about 4 years about what I was making so that I could actually make the movie that I wanted to make.
Yeah.
It's like Fight Club. Don't ever talk about...
That's the first rule of Fight Club.
The more we tell you, the more confused you're going to be.
You know, don't ever bring up the Beaver.
There's an 84-minute movie that will explain it so well that I can only screw it up.
Doing PR for this film would be a nightmare.
Yeah, and it has been for everyone who's tried.
So many
including
secrets.
Me.
Sure. Absolutely.
All right, this is pretty exciting. Now, how do we get to see this?
Well, get there tonight, and I'll do this. You know, once in a while, I'm able to do this. I will offer. I'm going to offer 10 cents of comps. These are the last 20 tickets that we have. We always set aside tickets for you guys.
Yeah.
Find us on Facebook. Message us on Facebook. Mention Bill and Wendy. Let us know if you want one ticket or two. And the first 10 people that mention Bill and Wendy will find tickets.
Nice.
For
where do they go?
It's going to be it's 6 p.m.
No. Midwest Independent Film Festival Facebook page?
Yeah, just go to the Facebook page for the Midwest Independent Film Festival.
I thought you were going
to
say, we can't tell them that.
Right,
either.
Right. Don't ask
so
any other
secrets.
Questions, Wendy.
We
it's
can't
all
tell
secret.
You where it's going to be shown or
but
when.
For everyone else that wants to buy tickets, come out. You can go to MidwestFilm.com. You can see the trailer there, which I would say, at this point, if you're coming out, just don't watch any. Just come right,
no,
going blind.
No, go look at the trailer, because the trailer really...
Everything starts at 6 p.m. at Landmark Century Center Cinema, and we have another special bonus tonight. So before we have the Chicago premiere of Beaver Trilogy Part 4, we have a panel. We always have a producer's panel in the theater to kind of lead off the night. Well, headlining the panel tonight is a guy named Mark Roberts. He is the creator. He was actually
on with
you
guys.
Sure. Mike and Molly.
He told me that. He's the creator of Mike and Molly. He was executive producer and head writer of Two and a Half Men and was also on Big Bang Theory. So he is going to be there tonight.
And has a play, about, New Country.
And he has a play called New Country that's in town at the Den. So, and he's an Urbana, Illinois native. So he's back in Chicago and he's headlining the panel. So that's going to kind of, you know, you've got that all-star opener leading off for the Chicago premiere of Beaver Trilogy Part 4. So this is a jam-packed night. Go to MidwestFilm.com. And again, fans of Bill and Wendy, find us on Facebook, message us, and we'll take care of you guys tonight.
Brad, I feel like we neglected you, but you really can't talk about this. So
thank you for coming up.
And I will say this. If you're out of town tonight, at the end of the night tonight, it actually goes on VOD. So this is your one chance to see it on the big screen with Brad in town.
Right.
If you're outside of Chicago and you're tuning in, you can order it on VOD.
Ask Bill what VOD means, because it's really cute.
Video on demand.
Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
You can come turn the corner.
Someone stepped up his game.
You have to. You know, you have to.
iTunes, why the decision, Amazon, all that.
You studied film. You're doing documentaries now. Is that your long-term goal, Brad, is to stay with documentaries? Or how do you feel about that?
No, this was actually just a side project.
Yeah.
I also am an editor. Recently worked on Burnt and My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2. And
nice.
So this was just a project to kind of like satisfy my creative soul or whatever.
Yeah, but editing, you did IMAX editing, too.
I did. That's way different.
That's
for
that
Harrison Ford movie.
Yeah. Living in the Age of Airplanes. Did you guys see that one?
Haven't seen it. And I know you can't talk about it. I know. All your work is highly, highly
Don't tell them anything about my Big Fat Greek Wedding, too. We have no idea what that's going to be about.
This is working out so well for me.
I know. I really feel like we gave him no time, but I mean...
this is great.
It's Brad Besser. That's his name. Director of Beaver Trilogy Part 4. Brad Besser. Don't forget the name.
Brad Besser's here, everybody. And, you know, once in a while, you just have to say, I'm just going to go to the theater, and I'm going to trust... McNamara. I'm going to trust the Midwest Independent Film Festival. I'm going to trust Sundance and Hot Docs and all the critics that loved it and say, I'm just going to go in blind and take in Beaver Trilogy
Part 4.
Some
of the best movie experiences I've ever had is when I don't know anything at all about the movie I'm seeing.
No question.
There's no preconceived notions. You just let it unfold.
That's how I go through life.
It's better to go through life that way.
It just makes it so much more exciting because you never know what's going to happen.
Right?
If you don't know stuff, then every minute is a surprise.
That's so true.
And words to live by the way.
You could have a second career as a secret keeper. People might have something on their mind that they don't want to tell anybody. They tell you, and then it remains a secret.
Absolutely. When I was making this movie, I had to keep it. I had to keep it a secret from the people that I was making the movie about. Because if I told them too much, or even if I told friends too much, that might actually, the word might get out and I won't be able to ask the questions I want to ask. So even making the movie was a secret from the subjects, friends, everybody. Nobody knew what I was doing for 4 years. And it just kind of continues.
Sounds like my college years.
Yeah.
This is like a secret club where
it is like a secret club.
And Brad Besser is president.
Yep.
Oh, thank goodness.
Welcome into your treehouse. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Again, explain to people, Mike, if they want to get some free tickets to tonight's showing, what do they need to do?
I've just got 10 sets. We're very close to being sold out. So I've got 10 sets of free tickets for fans of Bill and Wendy. Find us on Facebook, Midwest Independent Film Festival. Message us. Mention Bill and Wendy. Let me know if you want one ticket or two. And either I or someone with the fest will get right back to you. You'll be all set for tonight, 6 p.m., Landmark Century Center Cinema.
Brad, congrats. Nice to meet you. Brad Besser is his name. We didn't say it enough.
Mm-hmm. And we won't tell anyone you were here. This will be our secret.
Mike, we'll see you next month.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
You.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Turn blue.
So
Mike's
much.
Here. Thanks. All right. More in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I know what I said earlier sounds... As I was saying, I'm like, this sounds stupid, but I love going to movies where I only know the title and I don't know who's in it or what it's about. It happens more with foreign films than American because the way our press system works with movies, you kind of go, okay, that guy's in it and that lady's in it and it's about this. But every once in a while, my wife and I will just go to see a foreign movie and I don't know anything about it and I love that.
But see, I wondered why you would say that because you know a lot about movies. Like, I'll bring something up and you'll go, oh, that's the one, so and so, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I really do not go to movies that much.
Right.
And when I do, a lot of times I don't know what it's about, and that's way better.
Yeah. It is.
I really enjoy that because you don't have any expectations whatsoever.
Anything could happen. You're surprised at every turn. I like that much, much better.
You knew about the Beaver Trilogy?
I knew a little bit about it.
Of course you did,
just
Mr.
a little
Film
bit.
Student.
I had heard of it, and I know. I don't want to divulge anything because the selling point is go in not knowing what it's about.
I got to Google like crazy. I'm going to be doing that later. I am. I can't stand it.
But Brad Besser, the guy who made it, is in a tough position because you're trying to convince people to go see your movie, but you don't want to tell them what the movie's about. And we as a people like to know that before we pay our money. You know?
I do like a little backstory.
Sure.
But you don't need it. It's just I'm a curious person by nature.
Right. Right.
So
That's why you travel with a man in a yellow hat.
I do.
Curious Wendy in the yellow hat. I won't even tell you what that's about.
I'm very curious.
I refuse to. In the second half of the show, which we're going to do later, because we like to do one half and then take a siesta and then come back and do another
Maybe tomorrow we should do the second half first.
Let's do that tomorrow.
All right.
We'll second half
them.
First tomorrow. Andy Kindler, who is hysterically funny. You've seen him on TV. You've seen him at your house and wondered how he got in your house. He'll be here at 2:05. Andy Kindler, friend of the show, will be here later on.
And he's
on.
Been around for quite some time.
Yeah, I met him in California when I was doing stand-up, and that's 20-some-odd years ago. He's probably been doing stand-up 25 or 30 years at this point.
Yep.
He's one of those guys, they call them comics, where all the guys that are jaded and have seen all the stand-up they ever need to see, when they see Andy, they go, oh, okay, that's how you do stand-up. He's that good.
He is really good.
Yeah, he was on The Tonight Show for quite a while. He was kind of a regular member of The Tonight Show's revolving cast for a while. You'll love him. He's Andy Kindler. He'll be by at 2:05.
Okay, and I have to tell you something that happened to me. I injured someone at a grocery store.
What happened? Are they okay? They're still with us?
Well, I am not the most patient person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
First tell me, did this person die? Because I don't want to make fun of the
person. No, but I really
dead.
Did like a bad thing. There was a woman, I was at the Jewel this time, and there's refrigerated sections where the milk is.
Sure.
You've got your sour cream.
So it's your grocer's dairy case.
Yes, yeah. And it's refrigerated.
Yeah.
And there are individual cases.
Yes.
There's one case that has, you know, the coffee creamers, one case with the milk, one with the cottage cheese and sour cream.
Yep.
Some with the whipped cream.
For the rich people. Right?
That's a whole different thing. The whipped cream, you have to whip it. You have to whisk that so much to get it to peak.
Don't I know
it. Just get the ready whip, people.
It's easier.
Oh, my God.
And you're not losing a lot by way of quality either.
No.
That's good stuff.
Plus, the ready whip has sugar in it, so it's way better.
Yep. And there's a chocolate variety, too.
There is?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that must have been what this woman was doing. She was trying to make up her mind between something. You know what? We have to take a break. We're going to do some news.
Oh, I got to know.
I know.
You maimed a woman.
The Beaver Trilogy.
Over her.
This is
whipped
the
cream.
Dairy Case Trilogy. I will tell you about it. But
right.
I injured someone.
All
I mean, right. I really hurt someone.
I'm anxious to
and
hear.
And not just with my comments.
Right. For a change. All right. Let's do this. We'll take a break. You'll get some news. Kim will give you the news. And then are you able to divulge this when we come back? Can you see what happened?
I'm gonna do it. I feel kind of guilty.
All right.
Happened a couple days ago, and I've been processing
it. Been sitting on this to see if it could be discussed.
And, you know, she may be a listener. I didn't get her name.
She was a listener.
Yeah, I would like to openly apologize to her, but something happened.
All right. So all that's coming up right after Kim's news. If it doesn't lead off the news, this could be your top news story. We don't know yet. We'll find out. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It is. All right. Thanks, Kim. Well, this isn't going to be pretty. As it turns out, you didn't permanently kill somebody.
Right? Here's what happened.
What'd you do?
Okay, and I don't think I did the right thing.
Oh, no.
I was shopping and trying to get all my things compiled for my aunt's stuffed pepper recipe and chicken enchiladas. That was Saturday and Sunday. So I had a lot of stuff to get.
Well, then whatever you did is within your rights.
No, but here's the thing. I am going about my business. I like to go... Jim likes to come to the grocery store with me because on the weekends they do liquor tasting.
They do. All right. So what time are we talking about? How early?
No, this is like, you know, probably 2 in the afternoon. All one right. or 2 in the afternoon.
All right. Charles Bukowski, tell me more.
And so I like to go by myself because I can just tool around the store and get everything I need, follow my list, get in, get out.
Yep.
So I'm approaching the dairy cases. And I need to get some skim milk.
Mm-hmm.
And we prefer Dean. Sorry, but we do.
So you think Dean Richards gets a kickback?
I do.
But he does not. I asked him. He doesn't get any money on that. They're using his name without his permission.
I don't believe you. So there's a woman who is standing in front of several of the dairy cases. There are like probably 5. And she's got...
She can't stand in front of all 5 dairy cases.
Well, she was
cases.
Kind of like... She was back a little bit, and she had her hand on her mouth like,
contemplating?
Yes.
Yeah.
So now she has approached one of the cases.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hinged doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like... My thought bubble is going, come on, or step back. Because
mm-hmm.
I had to get something from the refrigerated case that she was in front of.
Right.
So
how much time would you say had elapsed at that
well,
point?
Well, now, honestly, I'm waiting like a good, probably a minute.
All right. That seems like a long amount of time to just be standing there.
Might be a little less.
Grabbing by how much?
Might be like, it was a good 40 seconds. She was
right.
just kind of standing there, and she was in front of the one I wanted. And, you know, she looked like she was about ready to make the decision. So I'm like, I can wait.
Yeah.
I really was being very patient.
Right.
And then she's standing in front of one refrigerated case with her hand on her lip going, and like pointing with the other finger, like, what should I get? And then she moves to the case on her left. So I'm like, all right.
Here's my opening.
So I did that.
Yeah.
I opened the case to get my Dean's skim milk.
Yeah.
And I guess she was leaning against the case and her finger was there.
Oh.
And she just starts going, ow, 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 ow. And I'm like, God, what is going? Oh, my God. I caught her finger in the hinge.
But that sounds like an accident.
It was. So then I didn't know what to do. And I just said, oh, my God, are you okay?
Right.
I am so sorry.
Were you being genuine?
Just like this. I swear. I mean, right. I felt terrible.
Yeah.
And I said, are you okay? And she goes, oh, ow, yes, oh, ow, yes, yes, ow. And she kept saying
it. Did she say ow a lot?
Yes. Yeah. I said, are you sure you're okay? And she goes, yeah.
I always thought ow was one of those things you only say in cartoons.
No.
She actually kept saying ow.
She might have said owie. I mean, she really was like, you know, it hurt. I smashed her finger in the hinge.
Course. Right.
So I'm like, oh, my God, I am so sorry. Oh, are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be okay. And I go, are you sure?
Right.
And then she goes, yeah, yeah, I'm okay. And so I got my skim milk and left.
Oh, no.
What was I supposed to do?
You left the scene of a crime.
I did, and I think her husband was holding the cart like a little far away, but he witnessed this.
You just scampered off?
Well, I didn't know what else to do at that point. I asked if she was okay.
Was there any blood?
No, but then the jewel guy comes out of the back refrigerated case where, you know, the door with the hanging plastic.
There's always a guy back there.
He just pushes
Mike.
That.
His
yeah.
name's usually Mike.
It was Mike. And yeah. Mike comes out and he's like, oh my God, are you okay? And then I felt really stupid.
Sure.
So then I hurried along and got away. But what was I supposed to do? And why did she have her finger there?
Well, her finger was there as a means of support so she could reach in and grab out her frozen product.
But you're not in the store by yourself. This is not supermarket sweep. Everyone's
no.
there shopping at the same time. I didn't think for a minute her hand was in where the hinge would be.
Well, you didn't think, but you have to scope the area out and
I
say, are there
scoped
any
for a minute waiting for
that
her.
I could possibly cut off while I'm hurryingly getting my milk. That you could have killed her.
I know
lucky
it hurt.
She's still alive.
I know it hurt. There was no blood.
She said ow a lot.
She did say, she kept repeating, are you okay? Ow, ow, yes, ow. And she was holding her
was
finger.
It
I'm
red?
Like, I
could
am
you see,
so-
was it inflamed?
I didn't say, let me see it.
Oh,
I just said, oh my God, are you okay?
I would have stayed with her while
are you
until
sure
the paramedics
you're okay?
arrived.
But I didn't know what to do. Was I supposed to,
stay.
It's not cleanup in
you
aisle seven.
You owe it to that woman.
She said she was okay.
To stay.
If she said, I think you broke my finger, I would have said, okay, let's get someone. Now I'm feeling guilty that I didn't.
You left the scene of a crime.
I did.
Did you exchange information?
No.
Did you say quickly, by the way, if there's anything serious, my name is Kim Gordon. And
here's my Allstate
really,
number.
But what else can you do? I mean, you apologize. You felt terrible. I mean, she's going to have a little bruise or a cut. And I mean... You did everything you could do. You didn't ram her with her cart afterwards.
You might have ruined her career. What if she has a job?
As a nose picker? What?
Well, maybe she's a flautist or something, and she needs every finger.
Then she should protect her fingers and not put it in a place where other people are going to open a refrigerated hinged case.
Well, but I'm not taking her side, but you assume when you're in a situation like that you're safe from marauders who might try to disfigure you.
I was not
you.
A marauder. I was not trying to disfigure her.
But you could have killed her, and you just sped off. I can't.
I didn't speed. I actually walked very slowly because I was almost waiting for her to go, hey, get back here.
You hooligan.
Like, you know, I want to press charges. But, I mean, she...
she tried to give you the finger, and she couldn't because you mangled it, and she's like...
I think it was her ring finger on her right hand.
And could have bought her groceries.
Yeah, at least.
Okay,
that's what I would have done,
Kim. First of all, Kim says it's fine. What are you supposed to do? And now I should have bought her groceries.
You should have paid for her purchases.
But I just want to know if I should have done something extra. Should I have hugged her?
No, no. At that point, no.
Should I? You know how when you hurt your finger, you stick it in your mouth? Should I have put her finger in my mouth?
Yes. Yes.
Then she would have sued
that.
Me.
You
what are you doing? Ow, ow, ow.
And then was Jimmy there to help
no,
you, your husband?
No, this was no.
He was off having a Limerita. No. He didn't have time for this.
I think that was her because there was someone who was going to talk and then they just went away.
Well, you scared them.
Well, if you're a listener and I did this to you, I'm really sorry.
This is terrible. There's going to be a picture of you in every jewel now.
In the refrigerated case.
Right. To watch out for
not
you.
Not a missing child, but...
just you.
An injurer.
Right. This person is dangerous. If you're trying to get something from the dairy case, beware of this person. And people will go, James Spader injured a woman at Jewel. This is awful.
Oh, my God. 630 just said, just wanted to let you know the amputation of my wife's finger went well. You guys are so mean.
I can, you at least thought about staying, right? Like, what was the thought process where you go, I got
to
go?
What am I supposed to do? I
said, make sure she was all right.
I said, oh, my God. These are my exact words because I can recreate a story exactly. Right. And I felt terrible because, again.
Not for long.
I did, though. But what? And I walked away very slowly just in case she was right. going to call me back
right.
to get my information.
To give her last wishes. To just give her her last. With my last breath, I just want to say, I wish I had traveled more.
I'm just regretful now because I'm thinking I probably should have gotten the mic from the back and said, do you have an ice bag? Because I just smashed this woman's finger.
Right, right. Maybe that's your move, is you run to the front of the store to the ice chest and don't skimp and get the cheap ice. Get the nice clear cubes and bring them back and put those ice cubes on her.
Awkward, but accidents happen, says 847. 224, not your fault, Wendy. People should be aware of their surroundings. Mm. Hence, she should have gotten out of your way. And I did wait for her to make her decision.
But you said it went on almost a minute.
It did. And then she stepped away from the refrigerated case that I needed.
Right.
And she moved to the one to the left. And that's when she was just kind of like putting her hand up there, which I honestly did not notice.
You didn't see it at all during the
I just
maiming.
I wanted to get my milk and get out of there right. so she could hem and haw again.
Don't say that during the deposition. When they call you in, don't mention that last part. Just say, you know, safety first when I'm shopping. Throw that in there a lot.
I feel really guilty, and I just want, I should have offered to get her ice, I guess.
At least.
Well, it just shows you really do have a conscience, all right. kidding aside.
Right. And I did walk away very slowly because I really was worried about her finger.
Did
and
you
I...
put on a disguise after you left?
No. Sue, should I have done anything differently?
No, you did exactly what I would have done. Exactly.
Maim a woman, ruin a woman's life?
No, she didn't ruin anybody's life. She bent over backwards for her. No, no. If she said she was okay, she was okay.
That's it was the lady's finger that was bent
don't
over
be
backwards.
Guilty, Wendy, don't be guilty.
All right, Sue, thank
don't
you very
much. Don't
feel
guilty. You're already
you
guilty.
Welcome.
Don't
yes,
feel
I'm guilty,
guilty
about other things.
Right.
312, well, Wendy, if she wasn't going to do anything before, she will now. Wait, they're coming in fast and furious. She will.
Oh, I'm checking the police blotter to make sure there's not a warrant for your arrest.
Oh, if she wasn't going to do anything before, she will now that I've said this story.
Probably.
Oh,
I
God.
Wouldn't be shocked.
630 says Briskman and Briskman will be calling.
Yep. Expect a call from the Briskman brothers and Peter Francis Geraci.
I'd rather use the Briskmans. Her fault, not yours. If you're that feeble that you need to support your hand. Listen, she wasn't feeble.
She
was young.
Older, how old was she?
She was my age.
Yeah.
Hence, I say young.
All right.
And, all you right. know, but it was just, she couldn't make up her mind. And then the hand is just up there.
Yeah. As like, if to say, please, nobody harm me. Please.
No,
it's
just,
my only day to shop.
Oh.
I'm helping orphans.
630 says, don't worry, Wendy. They were able to reattach my finger.
Are you traumatized now? Next time you go to the dairy case, I bet you'll be extremely careful.
Well, I do put this out there as a public service to make
right.
sure no one's hand is in the slot where the hinges are when you open the other door next
yeah.
to it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What would you have done?
I would have stayed until
stayed
I knew.
Stayed what?
I would have stayed the night. To make sure that she didn't go lapse into a coma. Because a lot of times when you have a traumatic experience, you don't feel it right away. But I would have made sure she didn't fall asleep so she didn't lapse into a coma.
No, okay, and that's for a head injury, not a finger injury.
Well, it starts, but you know how blood is. It starts there, but it travels.
She was shopping for milk, correct?
Right.
Well, at least
it's all she could afford, Kevin.
Calcium in there, you know, and that way.
Right.
Otherwise, her finger could have broken right off.
That's true.
Kevin,
milk builds bones.
You're in the producer's booth for a reason. Shut up. Hi, Don.
Hi, Wendy. How you doing? I'm enjoying your conversation here, but what I always do when somebody doesn't notice me behind, I just say, hey, how you doing or something. I reach over their shoulder to the door and open
right.
it up.
Well, I was
going
to
give her a chance to
I
do that.
I could have said, excuse me, but I thought, you know, she was right on the verge of making up her mind.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, I'll just wait.
She was for the last half hour.
It wasn't that long. Thank you, Don. We have to take a break. I just feel really guilty. And if you're
right.
listening, I'm very sorry that I smashed your finger.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I could have done. I guess hindsight is far greater. And perhaps I should have gotten someone at the Jewel to give you some ice and give me some extra Monopoly pieces.
Right. You don't get Monopoly pieces for ruining a woman's hand.
That was a bonus one.
No. That's impossible. All right. We'll be back in a little bit. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN. Well, if you're just joining us, what a horrible story we've heard. Wendy had been planning this for weeks. She went to the Jewel and then purposely, it sounds like, disfigured.
Let me tell my own story.
Go ahead, but this is not pretty.
A woman was taking a lot of time in front of one of the refrigerated display cases for the dairy.
A time element that was first described as a minute and then was
maybe
buckled
40
back
seconds.
To 40 seconds. Okay.
Still. And still she was just kind of like her hand on her lip, like, Yep. Hand on the head for a while, like, I don't know what to do. And, you know, I know I could have said, excuse me, could I get in there? But I found something else to look at and I thought, you know, I'll just let her make her decision, whatever.
What were you looking at that ate up your 40 seconds?
They had some frozen pizzas on sale, and I'm like, that's not really that cheap.
All right.
But I just was looking at stuff.
So you found some busy work until you could move in. All right.
There was a clearance card. I looked at that wondering who in God's name ever buys that stuff.
Right.
You know.
Food that nobody else wants at half the price. I'll take it.
Expired much?
Right.
It expires tomorrow. I'll buy it for a penny. So I was just kind of killing some time, letting her make up her mind. And when I saw she moved to the cooler on her left, I thought, okay, I can swoop in, get my Dean skim milk, and be on my way.
Yeah.
And as I opened the door to grab the milk very quickly, her hand was up on...
Finger popped off.
No, her finger did not pop off, but it was in the ridge in between the refrigerated cases. So when I opened my case, it smashed her finger in the hinge.
No.
And I
did you see her finger at all afterwards? Like,
no.
Was it, you didn't see it? Don't know if it was inflamed or if it was swollen. You didn't see any of that red.
I don't know her. I'm not going to go, let me see that. I just went, oh my God, I am so sorry. Are you okay? Yes. Ow. Yeah. Owie.
I know you didn't want to see it, but don't you think that that's pertinent information to
see?
Well,
I said, are you sure you're okay?
Yeah.
Are you sure? I
am so
sorry.
I
and then
see
I walked away slowly, and I just didn't know what else I could have done. I guess now I would have gotten the Jewel person and said, "Could you get me an ice bag? I just smashed this woman's finger."
Right,
Jim. What's your advice?
Well, you know, Wendy, I feel bad because I've been in these situations where maybe I've clipped somebody's heels with a cart going through the store.
That was you?
Yeah, that was me. I'm notorious for this, but I think in the future, I think a real inexpensive thing for you to go out and purchase would be a couple of safety cones. Take them with you when you go shopping and just cordon off the area before you open the door.
That's a good idea. That's a solid idea.
You are a genius.
Beep, 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 beep. Yes. Like you're in reverse.
That's a very good idea.
All right.
Clear the area.
All right. I like that, Jim. What about the guy the little sign with the guy slipping on the wet floor?
Have
Should I bring
handy.
That too?
Yep. Always have one of those handy.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate
it. People are going to have to buy shopping insurance. If they know you're at the Jewel, they're going to have to purchase some sort of short-term shopping insurance.
It was totally an accident.
From Allstate, by the way.
I feel really bad.
Are you sure you feel bad?
I do. Yeah? I just wondered if there was something else I could have done.
Right.
I mean, of course I feel bad. I hurt someone unintentionally. 708 says I just found a finger in my milk. I think they're hurting someone intentionally, too. Someone else hurt someone. What did you do, Harold?
Yeah. Well, I was at the train, and they were doing construction, so they directed everybody to one...
car?
When you go through... No, the gate that you go through...
Turnstile?
Turnstile. You know, the tall turnstile that go, you know, from the ground to about 7 feet high or whatever. The cheese grater ones. And so I'm in line, and there's a bunch of people, and this girl walks... She walks like 2 minutes later, but 30 seconds later after I get in line, and she walks right around me and stands in front of me. I'm only like 1 foot behind the person in front of me, and she like squeezes me, and I'm like, look behind me, and there's nobody there. And so she knows there's a line. So when we went through, she went through the cheese grater turnstile. She walked through it, and she got halfway through. I pulled on it and stopped it, and she went bing into
All right. Well, Harold, this was intentional. You are a terrible person.
I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about intentional stuff. I thought that's good.
No, I was not doing it intentionally.
I'm sorry, Pinky. Wendy.
All right, goofball.
He did that on purpose.
Yeah, see, I did not do this on purpose. I was just trying to get my milk, get in, get out.
Right.
Get about my business.
Right, of course.
So
understood.
I guess why I do feel bad that it happened.
Could you post a schedule of when you plan on shopping over the next several weeks, just as a warning to the good people of Chicagoland, just to be safe, just so they know. Wendy's at That Jewel at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
I'm going to go to Mariano's this time just to switch it up.
Sure. That's better. All right. We will talk in a little bit.
Watch your fingers.
That's all you have to. We'll talk to Steve Bertrand. We'll find out what's on the Wintrust business launch in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. What an uncomfortable last few moments it's been in the studio.
You were told it too, right? Bill Murdoch,
our chief engineer, Bill Murdoch.
He told me,
and I quote, "Bill, I'm going to need you to wiggle it for me." Those were his words.
Well, the yank and wiggle came after you got his attention, saying you're going to have to wiggle for me. And Bill's
right.
Like, "Huh?"
Yeah, and I had to remind him and myself for a moment that I'm a married man. I'm a happily married man. I don't have time to do any of the things he wanted me to do.
He was under the console and he was fixing some things. You broke your computer.
Well, all I did was I turned it on, which apparently was the wrong thing to do. I pressed the on button in the first half of the show. Go ahead. You're fine. And it stopped working. I just got a gray screen, and I don't know how to fix anything computer-wise. I just know when something's working or not working, and mine wasn't. I just got a fully gray screen. So the paces we go through here on the show are you call the engineering department, and they send down a professional, and then they fix it for you. And that's the reason Bill Murdoch was in the studio. But then he suggested some very, very unkind things.
They weren't unkind.
Well.
Untoward.
They were untoward. That's what they were. And I felt uncomfortable with most of them. One or two I could see. But the rest of them I was very uncomfortable
with.
The
yank and giggle was weird.
There's no time for
that. Or wiggle.
We've got a show to do.
Giggle comes after that.
Oh, yank, wiggle, giggle.
Right.
All right.
It's like shake, rattle, and roll, but in the terms of engineers. He always, I know you've heard this before, he always explains to me what was wrong.
I like to watch your face because I'm a gadget bitch, and I get it, and I like it. It's kind of like foreplay for me.
I don't understand. Like, I don't get it to begin with, and then he explains what's wrong. He always goes, you know, the C8 condensers blow out every 1,300 mph's, and I always go, yeah, right around 1,300. But I don't know what he's talking about. But he always does explain it to me, what's wrong, and I just nod.
Well, Bill Murdoch is a great engineer, and he tries to explain what he, you know how a doctor or a dentist will say, here's what I'm going to do before he does it, just to put your mind at ease.
Yep.
Bill Murdoch tries to confuse you before he does it.
He would know by now that I mean, whenever anything's not working, here's what I can do. I can plug something in, and if that fixes it, then we're in good shape.
What'd you do to the light bulb that wasn't working today?
Oh, I was going to say punched it,
but I didn't
punch it. I just tapped on it until it worked, and then it worked. But that doesn't work, I've learned, with everything. You can't just keep tapping on something and hoping eventually it works. But it does work sometimes. You saw it today.
I know. It impressed me, quite honestly. But that's what we did in the olden days when I was going to say back in the day, but that's a phrase that bothers you. But I enjoy saying it, so I'm going to say it. Back
I
in the day.
You never know what day whenever people say that.
Thursday.
Now I know. So whenever anyone says back in the day, I just go, oh, Thursday. All right.
Right.
Now I have a point of reference.
So back in the day when you would have your television set and it would go on the blink, which is what everybody called it.
Right, on the blink.
But it didn't blink. It just either there was a white hole in the center of it, like, you know, you could come towards the light.
Right.
Or the picture would be kind of scrambled. So what would you do? You'd walk over and you'd hit out in the top of
it. Yeah, that's true.
It worked every time.
That's true. About a month ago, our back door, because of the cold weather, where the lock is, there's like a latch lock on it.
I know what you're going to say.
And it warped because of the cold weather. So it didn't fit anymore.
So it wouldn't stay locked.
Right. It wouldn't
stay
locked. It wouldn't. Right. And I don't know if you'll remember this because we're going back a month, but there was a particularly windy 2 days in a row where the wind just was ferocious and our back door kept opening because the wind would blow it. And that's not good because somebody could just come in the house. The back door just opened. So my wife told me about this and
it's
a Sunday And I said, I'll try to fix it, which is ridiculous because my odds of fixing something are slim. But I did fix it. I figured out a way to make a groove in the wood deeper than it was so that the latch would fit in there. And I fixed it. And that was a month ago. She still talks about it as though I had saved somebody's life. Like the other day, she said, remember when you fixed the latch on the door? And I do, because it was 4 weeks ago. And I go, I did. And she just smiles like, how about that?
Do you see how easy you as guys have it? Do one thing for us. We'll remember it forever.
I know.
Really?
I know. I just wish I was better at it. And I know there's ways to get better at it. But
YouTube.
You could do that.
Because our gate in the backyard, the same thing. When it's cold, it wasn't latching. So all I did was loosen the screws and push the one part down a little bit because there's a little wiggle room in the bracket.
Right.
And it works. Now, when the weather warms up, I'm going to have to lift it up again so it'll latch. But we have a dog. He can't get out of the yard.
So when people talk to you about brackets this time of year, that's what you're thinking. You're thinking about the fence, not the NCAA tournament.
Exactly. Although I should have been in the brackets because there's a pizza place in Stickney, which is awesome, called Villanova. And it's the crust on the pizza is about as thin as a piece of notebook paper.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to do the bracket so I could pick Villanova. And had I done that, it would have been Thrillanova.
You would have been a rich woman today. You would have. When we moved in, not into our house, but the apartment we lived in prior to the house, there was a drawer that wasn't working properly. And I said to my wife, I'll fix this. And it took me 3 years to fix that. Once I did fix it, it worked for a little while. But it was just a matter of the you know, those
did
wheels.
Did you gouge out some more wood?
No. I don't remember how I fixed that. But I would say over the course of my lifetime, I have fixed less than a dozen things. I just don't know how to.
It still counts.
I guess. But then there's guys like Lou Manfredini fixes more stuff in a day. He just looks at stuff and it's fixed. Lou's got this ability. Something's broken. He just looks at it and he gives it like this look and the thing goes, all right. And then it's fixed.
I'll fix myself.
Yeah, I don't want trouble from Lou Manfredini and then it's fixed.
But that's what he does. I mean, seriously, and I never criticize my husband. He is not handy because his dad before him was not handy. If something was broken, they called someone.
Right, right. Now, here's the difference between my dad and myself. My dad had like a whole tool table, not just a shelf or something like this, but a table that you could do stuff on. He never used it, but he had it in the garage. And then I guess every guy's supposed to have a workbench or something, but that would be like the most, I don't know how much a workbench costs. Are they a couple $100? That would be the most wasted money I'd ever spend. Because once I had it, I wouldn't.
You could do crafts on it. You know what Jim used to use with his workbench?
What?
He used to make custom action figures where
he
would
did?
Paint them or take the head off of somebody else.
You could do some Legos without hurting your lower back from bending
over.
That's
something too, I guess.
That's true.
All right. Well, all right. Well, I admire guys like Lou Manfredini, like Bill Murdoch, who came in here and he saved the day. Yes, he said some inappropriate things to me, but he's taking me dancing Saturday. So I think that's
so it's all good.
Yeah, it all balances out, doesn't it? All right, we've got a big show, second half. Andy Kindler, very funny man. Andy Kindler will be joining us. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. What's wrong? You look all out of breath. What's wrong?
I'm not good at a Rubik's Cube, okay?
Yeah.
And there are arms on the computer. This is just ridiculous. There are big problems in this world. I can't see Kevin's face, and you just hit the microphone. There are arms on the computer monitors, so you can move them in various ways. Kevin, you know how I like it.
The engineers were all over the place down there.
They were fixing things, but
they
left things slightly different from what they used to be.
Bend it that way. It's like we're playing Twister with a monitor.
Bend it like Beckham, Kevin. Can you do that for us?
But see, it has to come back. Oh, you're almost there. You're almost there. You're almost there. A little further down a little bit. Oh.
I wonder about the person who just tuned in the show right now. I wonder what they think.
I don't
think.
Wonder at all.
What do you think they're thinking, Steve?
I know what
be
they're
honest.
Thinking, yeah.
You're almost there. You're like a half inch
don't.
Away. Oh, that is it. The
don't.
Sweet spot.
Don't.
Thank you, Kevin. All right.
We're
what were we
going to take
saying?
Away our Silver Circle Awards. They'll take them away. They will.
It's
I've
Silver
seen them do
Surfer.
That. They're going to take all of our awards away. Both of them.
Your cord is being stretched. I'm sorry.
This
it
is. This is so embarrassing.
Your cord is being stretched, and it's being pulled too tight, and your knob's going to come out.
All right. I'm fine with that.
See,
it
the back of his computer
means
monitor.
6 more weeks of summer.
Your cord is too short.
All right. Now I am filing a class action suit. A no class action suit.
That's me. I'm sorry. I like to go through life in wonderment.
Can I tell you, now this seems to be a day where most of the stories we've been talking about are awful.
They've been dirty.
They've been, well, because some of us have chosen to make them.
Bill Murdoch,
right? Right. Listen to this. This is, I know you're not a fan of all things Disney. I know you've had some bad experiences at Disney.
I've recouped. I had some bad childhood moments there.
Right.
I went there the summer after my dad died.
Yeah.
I threw up in my magenta Mickey Mouse ears in the Smoky Mountains.
But you've admitted none of what has gone on there is the fault of the Walt Disney Corporation.
No. And then I did a make good. My sister took us, and that's when Dylan got lice, and it was Disney on lice.
Right.
Okay, that trip wasn't really good either. But last summer when I went for Star Wars weekend, and it was fantastic.
Time. Yeah.
So it's not Disney's fault.
It's not.
And I do like Disney.
All right. Well, tell me what you make of this. French authorities are investigating the death of a Disneyland Paris worker whose body was found inside the park's Phantom Manor haunted house on Saturday. That's their version of the Haunted Mansion.
Which I love.
That's a good time, the Haunted Mansion.
You sure it wasn't a dummy?
No, it was a worker. It was a guy who worked there. Another employee found the 45-year-old technician's body around 10 a.m. on a Saturday, just before the park was scheduled to open. A spokesman for a local prosecutor told the outlet that the man may have died accidentally by electric shock. We are truly saddened to learn of the passing of one of our cast members. They never call them workers at Disney. They're always cast members. And our hearts go out to his family and friends during this very difficult time, the park said in a statement. The employee is believed to have died by electric shock while working on the attraction. The employee had worked at the park since 2002 and was a father from Noisy Le Grand.
That was my nickname in high school.
Your French nickname?
Yes.
Oh, here comes Noisy Le Grand.
Je m'appelle Noisy Le Grand.
Oh, be our guest. His name has not been released. The park spokeswoman said that Disneyland Paris hasn't determined when the ride would reopen. Some reports suggest
they get the body out of
there. Well, it's a very popular attraction. And you know, the weird thing about the Haunted Mansion is, at least the ones in Disney World and Disneyland, is they're saying they have 999 happy haunts, but they want one more. You know, that's like the theme of the ride, is they're looking for one more ghost to inhabit the Haunted Mansion. Well, in France, that is no longer an issue. They have their even thousand. The theme park, which is located 20 miles out of Paris, touts itself as the most visited tourist destination in all of Europe. Which is amazing, because when they first opened, nobody was going to it. They thought that it was... I'm trying to think of how to say this politely. It didn't fit the landscape of France, that it was too gaudy for France. So people weren't going the first couple of years.
How could it be too gaudy?
It just didn't fit. Like if you're in Paris,
Sacre
you're in France.
Bleu.
Exactly. If you're in Paris or France, you think I'm going to see all the
Eiffel
sights.
Tower is pretty.
It is
grand,
but that's like unique to France. Like to them, to Parisians, they're looking at it as that's an American thing
too
they sent over.
Kind
yeah,
of thing.
It's not us. That's America trying to show us what a good yeah. So when it first opened, they were panicking, going, no one's coming to our park. Then they started electrocuting workers in the rides, and everyone's like, well, let's see what this is all about. Just about half the guests were from France last year. 16% were from England, 9% from Spain. I don't know why that's relevant to the story of the guy electrocuting himself in the haunted house, but...
I thought Disney didn't admit that someone died on the property.
That's the rule here, like in Florida and in California.
What happens in Paris?
That stays in Paris.
Woohoo!
That might just be their law in America, Disneyland and Disney World. Maybe in Europe.
I think Disney is Disney, regardless of whether it's in the States or not.
But I wouldn't blame this. I mean, as we've been saying, freaky things happen. Disney isn't trying to kill its employees, have
freaky
them electrocute.
Don't
freaky
they have a
tiki
freaky
birds.
Yeah.
Right. So, so the ride is temporarily shut down. They don't know when it'll reopen. But then that's weird, because every time you go through that part of the ride, you go, oh, that's where that guy got electrocuted.
Doesn't that add to the excitement, though?
Maybe.
I mean it.
Maybe.
I feel bad he's died. I feel bad for his family.
Yeah.
But as time goes on, that becomes kind of an exciting part of it. Oh, see that place right there? That's where that guy got electrocuted.
There's some ride in Epcot where you spin around in, I think they call it a centrifuge, where you just keep spinning around really fast.
And then you puke?
Well, they give you the option. They say, are you going to throw up before or after? And then they sit you based on that answer.
All the pukas on the left.
Those who can wait on the right, please. And I don't remember all the specifics, but somebody went in there with some kind of a condition that wasn't, you know, they warn you. There's warnings on all those rides.
Yeah.
If you're heart pregnant, condition, heart condition.
Epilepsy. There are a lot of different things. Yeah.
And somebody went on the ride that was not fully equipped to ride that ride, and it didn't end well for them. There's a bunch of stories. I told you there's that book that Ryan Burrow went out and I was talking about the book, and then Ryan Burrow comes like 3 days later. He goes, hey, I found the book. I read the whole book. In 2 or 3 days, there's some weird stuff that went on over at Disney.
What's it called? Behind the Mouse?
Inside the Mouse.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know if
Behind
it's still
Behind the Mouse is different.
That's a totally different book. Ryan Burrow also has that book, but it's taken him a lot longer to read that one. I don't know why.
Because there are animated pictures.
Right. He's drawing pictures in that book.
And diagrams.
He has no business drawing. I'm embarrassed for him, quite frankly. So, So there's your story about the Haunted Mansion in France.
That's sad, really.
It's very sad. It's very, very sad. All right, we're going to take a break in just a little bit, and then we have a big show. We're going to talk to, later on, Andy Kindler, very funny guy, and Mark Conkle, Tribune columnist, will be with us in a little while, too. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN, as Steve Bertrand said. And we have got a newsmaker, a newsbreaker in the studio with us from DNAinfo.com. He's Mark Conkle. Thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks for having me back in the fishbowl. I love being here.
You broke a fantastic story, a big, big story. And it deals with Eddie Johnson. This is the interim top cop who Mayor Emanuel hand chose over the others. But it's not so much about him as it is about his girlfriend.
Fiance.
Yeah.
I got to give credit to my partner on the story, Heather Sharon. You know, we both worked on it together. But yeah, it was an intriguing thing because it started for me when there was a deliberation about who was going to be the next top cop off the police board list. And that's when I found out that Eugene Williams, who is a deputy chief, was involved in an alleged cheating scandal on the lieutenant's exam. And there was an investigation into it. And that was one of the reasons, was a red flag for him not becoming superintendent. And I wrote that story and I asked the question, you know, will the mayor go off the list, and didn't get any answers. But when finally it came out that Johnson was getting picked and he didn't apply for the job.
Yeah, they had three people that were up for it. And then all of a sudden now the blue mayor, Rahm Emanuel, says, oh, yeah, Eddie Johnson's the guy.
Right. And it was kind of, you know, it was kind of a shock because not because he went off the list, just because of the way he did it, and he made him a second interim police superintendent, and the whole process has to start over.
Yeah.
So I started asking questions about that a little bit, and, you know, I don't know if you guys read it, but there's an anonymous police blog called Second City Cop where they post all their grievances against each other, and they go back and forth anonymously and say really horrible things. Well, some of the really horrible things had to do with whether or not Superintendent Johnson's fiance was involved in this alleged cheating scandal that was being investigated by internal affairs. And Heather and I both received tips that led to a document that I got about that showed the initial report of the internal affairs investigation, which was started in November 2014, which was, you know, several months before the exam even took place, but didn't seem to go anywhere. And in that document, they named not only Williams as the target, but the tip named three people. One was Lieutenant Hall, who's married to former first deputy Al Weisinger, who recently retired. Internal Affairs Sergeant at the time, Davina Ward, who's a member of the board of the local chapter of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives that Eugene Williams is president of, and then also Lieutenant Nakia Fenner, who was engaged to Johnson, and their names were on there. And we've learned of other people who were supposedly in this study group where alleged cheating happened, but we had to focus on those people because those are the names that were in that initial report. So that led to, you know, questions, a sit-down with the superintendent yesterday, which, you know, was mostly about, you know, his taking over the job. But I had, with that report, I had to ask him those questions.
All right. So you say a study group. Would it be common for them to get information that's going to show up on?
So here's the thing about that. Yes, it's common to have study groups. In fact, you could pay a couple $1,000s to do a promotional exam study group for law enforcement. But Eugene Williams was in a special position. He was in his role as chief of administration and support services. He was in charge of the test. He was an expert that was questioned in order to make the test questions. When you take a lieutenant's exam, you get like four phone books full of stuff that you're supposed to study, and 5 to 10% of it is on the test.
Yeah.
So we got access to a FOIA request response that said yes, he was the master expert on this, and he was the final person to review the potential questions on the exam given by the vendor. So that gives him the ability to help people.
Because he knows what's going to be on that test.
We don't know what he did. But the original investigation centered on someone who worked at headquarters and said, I saw this group. My question is, why is he doing it when he's got access to privileged information? And is that giving these certain people a leg up? And those certain people who were allegedly in the study group run by Williams, according to the tipster, all scored very well on the test. In fact, former Weisinger's wife, Lieutenant Hall, allegedly, or according to sources, scored number one on the test.
Oh.
And so it's the appearance of wrongdoing. Yeah. I wouldn't never say that any of these people cheated, but there was an investigation into an allegation. And when you put all those facts together, you know, it's a question that has to be answered.
Was that covered up to some extent, Mark, or just not made public, the investigation?
You know, those kind of investigations are confidential and they're never really made public until something happens. But my sources tell me that once this initial report was filed, that it was quashed, and it was in a way that I don't want to describe on air. But it was set aside, and everything went on as normal. But then something happened in February of this year when we were about to find out who was going to be on the list. Yeah. There was another person who...
Master list or the... Because it trickled down to three finalists, but there was a much larger list.
Yeah, we were getting close to the finalists.
Oh, okay.
So we're getting close to the finalists, and someone who had information about this, separate from the original whistleblower, wrote an email to everyone in the police department. It went... It was every list, and it wrote about these allegations and said, the fix is in, be warned about... these tainted lieutenant promotions and watch your back. And that person also went to the Inspector General Joe Ferguson's office, and that's where we've confirmed through sources that, you know, investigation is ongoing into that matter right now.
Okay, so at this point, there's an investigation that interim top cop Eddie Johnson's fiance, Nakia Fenner, she's a lieutenant?
She's a lieutenant in the Deering District, which is located in Bridgeport.
Okay, so at this point, there is an investigation going on in what she knew and what information she gave to her fiance.
We don't know what's happening with the investigation. The Inspector General keeps that close to the vest. When I sat down with Superintendent Johnson yesterday, and I got to say, by all accounts, all the people I talked to, even the people who don't like or aren't big fans of Eddie Johnson, spoke highly of him. And when I sat down with him, I got the same vibe from him.
And he would talk to you.
And he answered the questions. He understood why I had to ask them.
Yeah.
It wasn't an I didn't get confronted by an angry person who's, you know, you know, there's certain elected officials who, like, if you mention their family, they're like, we're not going to talk about my family.
Right.
Mayor Daley. And, you know, and Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like that. When I asked him about, you know, this, he said, well, I know that my fiance was involved in multiple study groups, but I don't think Eugene Williams had a study group, you know. And then when we contacted Lieutenant Fenner, she said she wasn't involved in any study groups at all. So there's just these two things, right, that just...
Even though there's proof that she was in some way involved in this.
There's no proof.
There's no proof?
There's just allegations. These are just allegations. The thing that sticks out is when we're talking about, ever since Laquan McDonald, I've been writing about the system. Like, it's not about Rahm. It's not about cops or the police department. It's about the system to investigate misconduct. And once I knew that there was an investigative report that was filed, and it didn't go anywhere, and there's no evidence of it, anything happening.
Right.
This is why the police code of silence harbors cops who are willing to lie and reports like we saw with Laquan McDonald, yes. where they don't jibe with what we saw in the video. These are the kind of systems that are set up where there's no way for a good cop in the department to make a complaint against someone who did something bad without feeling personal reprisals. And even in the letter, the original letter in November 14, the person who wrote it said, "I'm not one to make anonymous complaints, but this is the Chicago Police Department, and nobody wants to face right. personal repercussions."
Right.
And, when I talked to Eddie Johnson yesterday, and he said that's one of the things that he's looking to do is to try to find a way for good cops to make complaints against, in situations where officers either, make a mistake or do things that are intentional misconduct. And that's why this question goes all the way to the mayor. Like, you appointed a guy who is tangentially through a personal relationship connected to an alleged cheating scandal that's being investigated
currently
yeah. by the Inspector General's office. And the question that the mayor has to ask is, you want to build trust with people. These little things paint everyone with a broad brush, right? I'm stealing that quote from Superintendent Johnson. One bad cop makes it bad for everybody. Mm-hmm. Intentional misconduct can't be tolerated. There's obviously a broken system for handling police misconduct that's allowed a lot of things to go wrong for a long time. So, it's not about whether or not Eddie Johnson's a good guy, qualified guy. It's not only about that. It's about what power does he have to change the systems, and what backup does he have from City Hall to change those systems, which allow a culture of lying and covering up misdeeds to continue in the police department that have been that way for generations. And it really is the new civil rights movement. Right. It's like you talk about when police departments became integrated and how neighborhoods became segregated by redlining and how things were covered up when there's no cameras on everybody's phone. Mm-hmm. Well, times, technology in Chicago has changed, and those kind of things need to, be addressed. And this is just another example of it.
Mark Conkles here from DNA Info, talking about the story he broke about Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson and his fiance. We'll continue this in a little bit. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN, and we're talking to newsmaker, newsbreaker, journalist, and writer-at-large for DNAinfo.com, Mark Conkle. And in a nutshell, we're talking about interim top cop Eddie Johnson has a fiance, and her name is Lieutenant Nakia Fenner. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. And at this point, she is named in an investigation into alleged cheating on the department's lieutenant's exam. This is a story that I heard all over the place this morning. You broke the story with your...
Heather Sherrill.
Aren't you scared to come forward with this information? Don't you ever feel like, boy, if I'm going down the street, the cops are going to be after me? I know you are doing your duty and you're doing a hell of a job, but isn't there any fear behind you of like, wow, I don't know if I should spill the beans here?
I think you got to have general faith in humanity. And I know it sounds like a cliche and a lot of people say it, but like, most of the cops, I'm going to say, 80, 90% of the cops in Chicago are not bad cops.
Right.
And the fear that's out there is because they all wear the same uniform. We can't tell which ones are the bad ones and which ones are the good ones, which is why there's a great need, and the mayor should make this happen, for more transparency in how we investigate misconduct. If someone is accused and it's a bogus accusation, that's okay. People get accused of stuff that's not true all the time, and they get to go on with their lives. Patrick Kane, anybody? Right?
Yeah.
So what's the...
There are still people that believe that he did that too, though.
Okay, but still, but when it comes to a Chicago police officer, if you're accused of misconduct, and I'm not talking about whether or not you shot somebody, I'm talking about whether or not you demanded a free meal at a restaurant because you're an officer, or if you... you know, you flirted with a girl who didn't like it at a Walgreens and lied about it. If you're found violating Rule 14, which is lying on reports or making false statements, how can you testify before a judge? Like, these are real things that go to the point that people don't trust the police department because they don't know who the officers are in their district, where they live, where they drive home from work, where they get, who they might pull them over, if they're good or bad, which you should be able to look up once you have contact with an officer, mm-hmm. which your defense attorney should be able to know before you step in front of a judge. You know, these kind of things are super important, and especially with what happened with Laquan McDonald, and you know, and it's horrible. The video is horrible, and the death of a teenager and how it happened is horrible, but what's just as horrible is the fact that when you watch that video and you read the reports of the police officers who were there, that the information doesn't jibe. That is unacceptable, and that's what we're talking about. That's why this won't go away. You know, no matter what the mayor's task force on police accountability says, no matter what the Department of Justice says, until Chicagoans have transparency about who is serving and protecting them and what they're accused of doing, this is going to continue on. And Chicago will have the problem that it has. And that problem is skyrocketing shootings. Mm-hmm. Double the murders the last year. Like, we're on a pace to almost reach the 1990 shootings when people were getting picked off by snipers in Cabrini Green.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not happening in other places to the same extent that it's happening here right now. So it's a major concern, but like, you got to have faith in your fellow citizens.
I applaud you for coming forward with this.
See, I know that that's a valid question. Are you afraid to break a story? But this is the reason you became a journalist. You're licking your chops for stories like this, aren't you? You want to find this.
Well, you know, I don't consider myself an investigative journalist full time. I'm not looking to catch people you don't know doing things you don't care about. I'm trying to write about the situation in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And the situation now in Chicago is we've got an embattled mayor and mm-hmm. an embattled police department, and we've reached a tipping point, finally, with Laquan McDonald. If anything good came from that, it's that now all the things that people have been talking about who have not been getting attention paid to their concerns
right. Is
in the forefront. And it's not just a hashtag Black Lives Matter. This is happening in Chicago, most powerful mayor in the country, with all the clout in the world, the U.S. Department of Justice. What are we going to do about it now? And Chicago just can't be what we're looking at outside this window, this beautiful, glimmering place where rich people come to play.
Right. Yeah.
We have to be able to live here. And yeah. I live on the south side of Chicago.
What about this? Since you brought up Laquan McDonald, the mayor was criticized as to what he may or may not have known during the Laquan McDonald story. Now you have the same thing here, don't you? How much do you think Mayor Emanuel was aware of this with Eddie Johnson and with his fiance? Do you think he had any knowledge at all of this cheating scandal?
You know, that's a question that like would make good headlines
yeah.
to find out definitively.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to let that go if things change. Like, I think that You like what the mayor knew is important.
It is.
But what the mayor does now is more important. And what we're seeing happen is a good cop getting appointed to the superintendent job off the list, out of protocol. We're being told that he's the right man for the right job. And there's this little thing. This little question that's out there. And behind that is a bigger question about how do we investigate misconduct with the police department? Like, this is where this is going. Yeah. Everything goes to that. And if we don't start answering those and looking at it that way, instead of like, here's what I'm accomplishing. Here's the new person doing the same thing. Like, if we don't go after the system, then it doesn't matter who's in that job.
Right.
And, you know, I was just telling you off the air, we're all taught when we're younger, don't snitch, don't tattle on your sister or your brother. We're all told that. So when you see something going on, I understand why police officers want to support their own. But if they're doing something bad, you're just as guilty if you're not coming forward.
Look, these are careers. These officers, they chose this profession maybe because their father did it before them or maybe because they wanted to make a difference. But this isn't like getting hired as the greeter at a Home Depot. You know, they have a pension. They make good money. They're raising families. And they don't want to lose that because, you know, making an allegation to the wrong person gets stalled. And then retribution hits them on the back end. So what do you do? Or you got a partner who's a bad egg, and you're assigned to that partner, and you were assigned to that partner by his clout. What are you gonna do? It's a paramilitary organization. Like I understand what they're going through, but like Superintendent Johnson's credit, if there's a system in place where some of these officers can come forward and say, I'm seeing this. We need to red flag this.
Yeah.
Please don't tell anybody about it because I have to come to work every day.
Yeah.
Like, that's a hard thing to do.
It is hard.
Thank you, Mark. Great story.
Excellent job.
Incredible job. Mark Conkle from DNA Info. Read his work there. We hope to see you soon.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break and then news from Steve. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
What has happened to Andy Kindler? Is this a new game we're playing?
Andy Kindler is a very funny comedian, and he has a penchant for hiding. He's going to be a guest on our show in a little while, and right now he's somewhere in the building, but he is hiding. So either you or me or both of us will have to find him if we want to have him on the show.
Do you know whose fault this is?
Whose?
Yours.
Why would it be my fault?
Because typically we don't promote people we have on the show in the first half of the show. We really don't.
Right.
And like all day you've been very excited that Andy Kindler is coming
in. I am
excited. And you've talked about it. And now he's turned around and he's driving home.
I did the same thing yesterday with Bill James, the writer of Baseball Abstract. I said, we're going to have Bill James on, everybody. I don't remember what time. Was it 1:30 or 2 o'clock? And then 1:30 came and 2 o'clock came.
We're supposed to have him on at 1.
Yeah, right. And then he eventually came on. But it's a new trend now with guests of our show to hide.
You know what it is?
Before they come on.
People have been accusing you, not me, you, of when you mention someone's name, something bad happens
to them. They die, which is the worst thing, I think, that could happen to you.
The good news is I think you've turned a corner. When you mention someone's name, the interview dies.
Right, so it's improving.
So
No, that's good for the comedian, but not for your show, really.
No, right, it hurts the show.
No, I know, but it's better than killing people.
Well, can I tell you what I did yesterday that I think is a marked improvement?
Oh, no.
I invoked the name of Doris Day.
Oh, yeah, you did. We were talking about Que Sera.
I said, we were talking about music of days gone by and that particular song, and I said, I know somebody must have sang it before Doris Day did, and we don't mention Doris Day that often, but I did yesterday. Did you see in the paper today?
What?
It was her birthday. So she didn't die, just the opposite. She celebrated her 92nd birthday. Don't say that about Doris Day.
I really did.
You know, I know this is impossible, and this is a segment that you and I do from time to time called Memories of Doris Day. We don't do it that often. I know this is impossible, but as a kid, it seemed like every time I saw Doris Day in a movie, there was a scene in the movie where she was driving through a car wash, one of those drive-through car washes, and her top wouldn't close, the top of her car, I guess.
Oh,
I should.
Shoot.
I know, I'm sorry, Steve.
It just happened once.
It had to have just been in one movie,
yes.
Right? But in my head, every time I saw a Doris Day movie as a kid, there was a scene where she was driving through a car wash with her car, a convertible, and the top went down and she got suds all over
her. Yeah, but in your vision of it, her top went down too.
Well, later when I got into high school.
That was in one movie.
With Rock Hudson, maybe?
Yes.
Was he also in it?
Yes, and I totally remember it because she...
Well, that's a fair guess, isn't it?
She couldn't have been more adorable.
They co-starred together.
Move Over, Darling.
All right, do you know the name of the movie that they were in?
That's funny.
That's Corey Crawford's autobiography, by the way. That's the name of his autobiography.
You want to have fun? Do a Google search of Doris Day Top Down.
No. I'm afraid to.
I'm afraid to.
Oh, was it James Garner, not Rock Hudson?
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet it was. Was he a doctor in that? I don't remember why I remember that scene so vividly.
Was there a massage scene in that movie, too?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Because she broke a rib. James Garner accidentally cracked two of her ribs during a massage scene.
Wow. James Garner was rough on Doris Day.
He wasn't even aware that Doris was injured until the next day when he felt the bandage while putting his arms around her.
Oh,
she
no.
Hit her ribs. He didn't even tell her.
That's awful. I've lost all respect for James Garner. I had
he
nothing
still
but
alive?
Respect. No, we lost James Garner. He's gone. He's gone. But again, I know how ridiculous this is because it was, as you pointed out, just one movie. But if I'm thinking about Doris Day, which doesn't happen that often, today is one of those days. But I always think, yeah, she was in a car wash. Yeah, you're showing me a picture of it now.
She was so adorable. Wasn't she so adorbs?
Adorsable. She really was. She had her own sitcom for a while where she was the mother of two boys.
Move Over, Darling.
That was the name of the movie.
No, now I'm telling
you to
move over.
Now you want me to move over. I can move over now.
But someone you didn't mention and did die
is... no. Who?
It's a trap.
Oh, the guy who played Admiral Akbar in the Star Wars movies died.
Eric Bowersfield, Admiral Akbar, who was
He's the guy who looks like Calamari.
Exactly.
He does.
Not Carl Amari.
No, from WGN, no.
Okay.
He looks like, I think that's the name of his species, too, is Mon Calamari, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
He was 93 years old, so he lived
was
a full
he
life.
Really?
Yeah, and he most memorably voiced the Rebellion's Admiral Akbar in Return of the Jedi.
It's a trap!
That's right. What he yelled out in one scene.
Exactly.
And maybe I'm imagining this, but it seems like every Admiral Akbar movie, there was a scene where he was going through a car wash, and his convertible top came down, and he got suds all over him. Am I mixing that up with something?
You don't want a saggy calamari.
No. Send it back if that's the case. Nobody wants that. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to find Andy Kindler and force him to be on the show, whether he likes it or not. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's a trap.
Were those the final words of the actor who played Admiral Akbar in the Star Wars movies?
Yes. Did you know he also voiced Bib Fortuna? I don't know what happened to my lip.
Oh.
Bib Fortuna in 1983's Return of the Jedi.
I did not know that.
Bib
Fortuna is the guy, his species is Twi'lek, and he's got a big long head, and he's Bib Fortuna's friend. He's Jabba the Hutt's friend. He's also his own best friend, but he's Jabba the Hutt's friend.
It looks like a ponytail cornucopia that he has, right?
Made of his head.
It's flesh.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is.
Yep.
Eric Bowersfield, he was 93 years old, and he did bring back...
brought sexy back.
That he did not do, but he did voiceover work for the Akbar character in Star Wars, the new movie that just came out.
He will be missed. I didn't know he was 93. That part shocked me.
He lived a very rich,
sure
full
he did.
Life.
Of course he did. Do you like stories about rogue flight attendants?
Kind of.
Are you aware? I don't even know if people know this, but I find this very, very amusing, although she's in a lot of trouble for this. There's a flight attendant who, when the flight landed the other day in Houston, instead of, I guess common practice when you're a flight attendant, and I've seen this in the past.
It's a smile.
Well, you smile, and you as people are leaving, you say goodbye to them, or bye-bye is what you say, is bye-bye when they're walking past you. And you thank them for flying on your airline, in this case, United Airlines. And then you wait until everybody's off the plane, and then you also get off the plane.
Don't you have to clean it up?
I think a lady comes by.
Just one woman?
Yeah. I think
Hazel?
I think Hazel comes by, and she tidies up. I don't think the flight attendants have to. I mean, if she sees, somebody left a bag of Milk Duds, then she can pick it up and throw it away. But I think they're allowed to just, they leave afterwards. Well, this flight attendant, instead of doing that, what she did is she deployed the emergency slide and then she slid down and left.
Well, you can't do that.
You're not supposed to do that.
Doesn't it cost money to reassemble it and get it back? You know how folding up a map when you're driving?
Yeah.
You have to do that with the slide.
I think it's not, you don't just press a button and the slide doesn't recoil back into the plane. I think you got to have union guys come and do it. A flight attendant's hasty and bizarre exit from a United Airlines airplane is now going viral. Video has been posted online showing the employee sliding down the emergency slide that she allegedly deployed, you have to say allegedly, shortly after the aircraft's arrival at George Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston. This happened on Monday morning, yesterday morning. She then just walked away from the Boeing 737. Well, why wouldn't you? You're off the plane. Your day is done.
And you don't want to fold up that slide again.
Right. Nobody said to her, hey, Kelly, you left the slide over there.
You
can
never
leave.
Get it back in the bag. Never.
It's not as easy as you think,
no,
Steve.
No, it's not.
It's not. There was no emergency, it says here. nor evident looming need for her to leave the aircraft so quickly. But
she should be fired.
Sometimes you just go, enough of this. I got to get out of here. I got things to do. All these people leaving slowly.
Shame on her. Don't you love to say that? Now you know you've really gotten old when you say that.
Shame on this woman.
Shame on her, Bill.
The airline bosses were also in the dark as to why she opened the front door and inflated the escape chute in the first place.
You're supposed to shut the front door.
Shut the front door. That's what you're supposed to do. She did not. United said that it suspended the unidentified employee from flying duties. Well, she's unstable.
And she has no identity.
Right. That's the worst part of it all, of all this. That's the saddest part of this. We hold, this is from United, this is a spokesperson. We hold all of our employees to the highest standard, even this nutcase.
They did not.
I added that. The unsafe behavior is unacceptable and does not represent the more than 20,000 flight attendants who ensure the safety of our customers, 9,099 of which know that they shouldn't just deploy the slide. Although I've always wanted to go down that slide, I know that you don't. You only do that for emergencies.
Yeah, you don't want to go down that slide because it's not supposed to be up for non-emergency situations.
Right.
Did anyone check to see if she won a lottery ticket the night before?
No.
What a good way to quit your job.
Right.
What did
you do on your last
day?
I took the slide down. It's my last day. I don't care. The aircraft arrived in Texas carrying 159 passengers and six crew members from Sacramento, California.
It's a trap.
Right. I wish Admiral Akbar was alive to have heard this. No one would have enjoyed this story more than him. The presumably impatient attendant, now they're just guessing she's impatient.
Yeah, they don't know that for a fact. She might just want to have fun.
Right. What's wrong with that? The presumably impatient attendant deployed the slide some 5 minutes later. Again, you see people disembarking from the plane and you go, what's taking so long? Just get your stuff and get off the plane. This woman did something about it.
She can't.
You're not supposed to. She's a renegade. According to Click 2 Houston, a man was having trouble breathing at the back of the plane and had to be escorted off the aircraft in a wheelchair. It is not known if this delay led to the attendant's actions.
You still can't do it, wheelchair or not.
Right. Regardless of any little side notes going on the plane, your job as a flight attendant is to wait patiently, be pleasant, and then when the moment arises, then you leave the plane.
We can bring him into the conversation because he just
walked. Andy Kindler, I don't know that Andy would participate in this. Andy, who are
well,
you?
Well, if you didn't clear it with my PR people.
Then you're not going to talk to us about this?
No, not if it's something unauthorized.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not okay because
what
I freak out. I'm never late.
Right.
But then
you're the most punctual. Can I say this? The most punctual comedian working today.
I pride myself on it.
It says that on Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's the only thing they say that's good about me. His show is terrible. Never get to laugh.
But
the crowd's bitterly disappointed, but the show starts on time.
Always on time.
And it ends like clockwork.
Every time Andy Kindler performs, the show starts and ends on time. Is it funny?
No, it's boring.
It's
clockwork.
Not right.
Like terrible clockwork. No, so what happened was there were these directions, and then they said go Lower Michigan Avenue.
I told you, did I not tell you?
But there's no sign.
No, there isn't.
Lower Michigan Avenue. So I say to myself, I don't see a sign.
Yeah.
Maybe I should keep driving. That's why I talk to myself. I do not see a sign. I should keep driving. And then that's it. I even passed the entrance where people go in.
Right.
Where in the old days when I wasn't renting cars.
Right.
Because my career's going down.
Don't say that.
No, it's not.
You've
is
never been more popular.
You can afford to rent cars now.
I am really.
You've never been more.
This is the year.
This is going to be the big. They're calling this the year of the Andy Kindler.
I'm taking it to another part of the same level, but this part has like couches.
It's a Kindler gentler nation.
That's what they're saying.
They say when you hit 60, that's when the business.
You're not 60 yet.
I can order off of the Denny's 55 and over menu.
Get out, really? I'm so jealous.
Yes, and every item says senior on it. So you have to actually order the senior grilled tilapia. And I don't even like a young bottom feeding fish. This is from my act right now. Everything else was
ad lib.
But an old, wrinkly, tired tilapia.
Who wants that?
Who needs it?
You don't need that.
It's available. So anyway, that's why I was late. And then even if I had gotten here on time, there's not a human being in the world who could go from the loading dock.
Right.
There's a loading dock. It's underwater, actually.
Yes. Right.
They bring you up to a submarine.
That's where they filmed Waterworld.
Yep.
There's a scuba. That's right, which was the greatest movie I ever
loved
saw.
It. We liked it.
It's all underwater. like my career.
Don't say that, Andy.
I'm the guy who says the negative thing, but, so people don't go to the show.
But you're popular with...
So you can go to Denny's.
I'm at Evanston at Space tonight, but I want to go the other way with it.
Oh,
you
know
do? What? You people don't need the show.
Stay away from
Reverse
the show.
Reverse psychology. I get it.
Right. Yeah.
You won't like it. Stay away. Don't go see you.
That does not work for show
I'll show you.
You won't like Bruce Springsteen. Who needs it? Oh, what was the story that I was going
to
wait on?
Well, it's an
now
ugly...
we don't have time. We
don't
have
time
to break
it up. You can stay, though, right? You're not leaving.
I'm not leaving. I'm the one who's late. What if right. I go, I got to go now?
That would be awful.
We'll do news. We'll sit and visit, talk about the
I've got interviews
menu.
Lined up all day.
You
kidding
do?
Me? 2:30, 2:35, 2:40, 2:50.
Are you on a junket? Are you doing
yes,
a junket?
Yes, I'm going to Nickelodeon at 3. I've got FX at 4. I've got True...
Listen to that.
So that's my fault.
That's
yeah,
your
that's
agent calling.
That's not mine. That's Are you watching the OJ movie or the
I
OJ
love it
show?
So much.
Oh my God, finale tonight. So you got a DVR so you can go see Andy Kindler.
But now people will be torn whether to see Andy or the final episode of OJ.
It's OJ calling him right now.
This is exciting when your dentist calls you.
You are getting old.
To confirm it. Look at this. Look at this bag.
Wow, life must be good, Andy. That's excellent. A Whole Foods shopping bag.
He's a bag man.
I just heard that every. Radio has been turned off
yes,
in the city of Chicago
that's right.
since I got in
That's
here.
Right.
Not true.
Sit still, relax.
Can I sit tight?
Yeah, sit tight then. Sit tight.
I can't do still, but I can sit tight.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right. We'll do the news. Steve will do the news.
Cool
and
my
then
jets.
We'll come back.
Cool my
your
heels.
Jets. Right.
Oh, my God.
Don't jump to conclusions.
It's never going
to
stop.
All right. More with Andy Kindler, who is always on time, except for today. It's a mystery.
And you're going to do improv today. This is the day.
All right.
Wendy's going to do improv. It's Bill, Wendy, and Andy Kindler in WGN.
I love you.
Steve, thank you so much. The always punctual Andy Kindler is our guest. Comedian, writer, actor. You know him from his work on Bob's Burgers, on Everybody Loves Raymond, and a whole lot more. He's appearing at Space in Evanston tonight. It is, Andy. I'm not making this up. It says right here. It's a 7:30 show.
Are you kidding me?
I wouldn't kid you
about
that.
That's what I think of doors opening at 7:30. That's what I think
And then
of.
The show should open at, what would you say?
I would say 7:30. Then it's like a rock concert with me.
Yeah,
an hour and a half.
Up?
I do it like Sly and the Family Stone.
You
do it. Yeah. Go very late. I don't know. Oh, Stephanie Haas is opening, and she's very funny.
Yeah. I've heard good things.
And a lot of comics don't know who's opening up, but I go the extra mile
to
learn who's
out,
on the show.
To find out
what do you
the
think
full
is
show
wrong
is.
With me? You're both looking at me like,
can I tell
you
what's
tell
wrong, with you?
Wrong with me?
Oh, nothing's wrong with you. You smell good.
I know what's wrong with you. You care too much.
That's right.
I don't think that's it.
You don't
it.
Think that's it?
That's no. I don't care. No, I do care. I care too much about things that aren't important. That's
is that
my whole
true?
Thing. Well, no. Like this thing, being late, that's the worst thing in the world to me. And I would be willing to knock over 25 pedestrians and cause a big, cause someone, the fire engine to derail to not be late.
Oh.
That's where my mind is a little off.
You know what it is? He's feeling guilty. That's it.
It is
I get
guilt.
I get it.
That's Jewish guilt. But it's not
Catholic,
just the Jews.
Same thing.
Oh, the Catholics are worse.
We're worse?
No, just in general. No. No, I always feel like Catholic guilt is really like
more intense.
You're going to hell. Where Jewish guilt's like, you look, we'll suffer again, we'll get rounded up. But you've got
you're
hell
right.
and Satan and all
I'm
that
I'm going
stuff.
There. That's right.
Yes.
We go for the top or the bottom.
Right.
The bottom, the lowest
we
level.
We have just an ongoing all the time. Don't get comfortable. You're doing something wrong.
Right.
Right.
It's fine that you're late. I come at the beginning of the show sometimes. Sometimes I'm 10 minutes
Wendy,
afterwards.
We call her buzzer beater.
That's not right.
Comes in right at the buzzer.
When I run the station, that kind of thing, that you're going to take that attitude, little Missy.
Elsewhere.
Take that. By the way, I like the new Pope.
And, are you and a fan of the new Pope?
Speaking of the new Pope,
and here's my joke. And I'm not normally a papal person.
Right.
I love the new Pope. Come on.
Everybody
not
very
love
progressive.
The new Pope?
He isn't
is very
he?
Progressive.
Yeah.
I'm pro-religion now because of the new atheist. But we don't want to get into it because it's not funny.
Right.
But I can't stand these Richard Dawkins and Bill Maher. And all. I hate them.
Not
like
a
poison.
Fan of Bill Maher's.
Is he an atheist?
Yeah, and he's a mean atheist. He's one of these mean atheists who goes, and not only is all religion bad, the Muslims are the worst. So let's all get Islamophobia going.
Yeah.
It's really bad. And Christopher Hitchens, who he's been dead 5 years, I say dig him up and dig him, put him down 8 feet deeper. That's what I say.
That's what
he
gets.
Oh, he was.
We just got pitched a book idea about him. Somebody just wrote a book about him.
I thought that was L. Ron Hubbard.
No, that's a different guy. That's a separate guy.
He was a guy who was like considered to be an intellectual and everything, but like he wrote a book about how horrible Mother Teresa was.
Yeah, right.
That's one of his books.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then in general, he just became an atheist. But he was also for the second Gulf War, which was actually his undoing.
If Bill Maher called you today and said, Andy, we need you for the show, for the HBO show on Friday.
Hey, Mr. Maher. Hi, Mr. Maher. That wasn't me. That's my character on stage. I love what you're saying about the Muslims. No, I think about this all the time. This is how ego-based I am. What if he said, do you want to do the show Friday?
What would you do?
I wouldn't do it.
You still wouldn't do it?
I wouldn't do it because I feel that I would be, it would not that it would be something wrong to do, but that I would be entering it on his territory.
Right.
And I think that's where you get messed up. I was going to say the SC.
No, you did handle it right. You know what?
I did handle it right?
Yeah, you handled it perfectly.
Because George Collins said the seven words were cheese.
No, don't change the seven words for us. Don't do that. Careful. Yeah. Please be careful.
No, it's hilarious. It's hilarious when I almost say a terrible word.
I love it.
Andy, I thought about you.
Schism.
I thought about you when Robin Williams died, and here's why. You used to talk about, and you know this.
And I have to stop doing, I used to do impressions of him and make fun of him.
You said that Robin Williams never made a good movie, right? Wasn't that your thing?
No, I actually thought his acting was better than, my whole thing was that he was like, he was always so uncomfortable with silences. And he always had these like, I'm a gay choreographer from the 40s. Right. I'm a black man from the 60s.
Yeah.
No, I used to make fun of him for many reasons, but I've stopped. I think it's appropriate.
Now
that
is a good time to not make fun of him.
It's sad now he passed away.
Right.
I mean, if Leno died, I'd continue. He says Chicago's very own, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Beef. Sure. Mr. Beef. Yeah, I love that town. Sure. Jay, look at me right. You know, Jay has a car that runs on the energy from all the people's dreams that he's crushed.
Oh, that's not true, is it?
I like that one.
He has a car that runs on the energy from his patented head shake. He has a car that he just keeps all of his condiments. He has a car where he just keeps his Tonight Show money. Because he used to say that all the time about how he never spends his Tonight Show money.
Right.
People are starving all over the world.
There's ways to spend the money.
No, but he wants you to know. Yeah. How you doing? Not so good? I haven't even touched my Tonight Show money. Because he would go after the Tonight Show, and he wouldn't go home. He would go do some corporate gig.
Right.
Yeah. And how come not looking? They make fun of how much Hillary gets paid. This guy gets paid $100,000. Who's got more information? Hillary.
You think?
I'm pro-Hillary.
I like Hillary.
I'm all for Hillary. I'm with her, as they say on Twitter.
Yeah.
You're
I do all the hashtags.
Burn?
Bernie, I don't feel the burn. And also, a lot of people who like
you're
Bernie
so serious.
Are very, they're unpleasant.
They're
would you have thought, growing up, if there was ever a Jewish presidential candidate, you'd go, that's probably going to be the guy that I support, but now you've got...
He's short sells that he's Jewish. You know, he doesn't talk about it that much.
It comes up once in a while.
Yeah, he'll
often say,
my father was... Blah, blah, blah. But you don't hear, I'd be so Jewish... that I wouldn't make it past the first primary. You'll vote for me this Passover. Remember, Andy Kindler for alderman. Look, you'll schwitz for my first day one in office. I will schwitz. I will cavell. I will plot. And I will make Purim a national. I will have a 3-day weekend for Simeat Saris. Every Shavuos, nobody works.
I'm lost on the Jewish words, the Yiddish.
You don't know what Shavuos is?
No, that one is the one I really don't know.
Now you can tell me you're not familiar with Tu Bishvat?
These are Star Wars characters now. No! You're not even mentioning Jewish holidays.
Akbar died.
You know, I have my idea for a Jewish reality show.
What is it?
Lock a family of Jews in a house and make them celebrate the High Holy Days.
Yeah.
And at the end of the week... you voted a Jew into the house because we're so annoying that you add more people. It's not like Big Brother. They get eliminated.
It's the opposite.
We voted Jew into the house. Do you think it'd be funny if they could see my emotions?
Yeah, because your arms are going back and forth. It's fun to watch. So at the pitch meeting at NBC, that's what you'll do.
Yes.
You'll tell them that that's your idea.
I pitch just for pranks now. I go and pitch overly Jewish shows. I go, yes, here's my idea of a show. It's called Jews, J-U-I-C-S-Z, Jews. It's about Orthodox Jew who runs a Jamba Juice stand. And I put in all of the juice drinks, Mogan David. So how are you enjoying your carrot squeezy? I put some Mogan David in there. Enjoy a complimentary macaroon. Next week on Jews.
Jamba Juice.
Things you get kosher. Things don't look kosher when a guy comes in and demands everything be halal. Halal! Halal Larry! Remember that show, Halal Larry?
McLean Stevenson. Absolutely.
Is a macaroon Jewish?
It is not the new kinds. The old kinds are the French, which are actually delicious. The Jewish macaroon has coconut in it.
Andy Kindler's here. More explanation of the history of macaroons coming up next if you want to jump in.
And Mandelbread!
And Mandelbread, 312-981-7200 for your questions and complaints. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Complaints!
Andy, you're a fan of the Real Housewives of
No. That was off the air.
You don't want to talk about
Well, I'll talk about it. We watch the Real Housewives of various areas.
Yes.
And they call them Real Housewives because otherwise people at home will go, I don't believe those are real. Those are Shakespearean trained actresses. What are you telling me? They're real?
No, they're Real Housewives. It says it on the title.
Nothing's real if you know what I'm saying.
What? Like the breast?
Come on.
Those are not real fake breasts?
No, they're real. But what is it about?
I don't want to see real. I told my wife, I don't want your real breasts.
No one needs
that. Get
that
out of here.
Right.
And bring me some. Thank God she's not listening. People think I'm gay, but my wife's name is Mrs. Beardsley. Mrs. Beardsley. And you have to admit, in lieu of comedy, I still have the blah, 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 bing, bang.
You still have that going.
Yeah, go high. Mrs. Beardsley.
And then move something to the side of your mouth.
Yeah.
What is in it for you to watch this show, though? You know it's fake. Why do you enjoy it so much?
You know what it is? Because I watch too much cable news. So after watching 9 hours of Morning Joe.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. But it's a diversion.
Yeah.
What is it called? Guilty pleasure.
It is.
But it does get old because the plots never change.
They're always yelling and fighting.
I can't believe she said. Did she say that to you?
Yeah.
I would never. And that's so it gets old.
But you seem above that to me for some weird reason.
Oh, well, normally I'm reading Einstein's.
Sure.
I'm trying to come up with new Einstein's unified field theory.
Yeah, right.
And then I collect rocks and minerals.
So where do you find time?
Igneous rocks?
What's that?
Igneous rocks or what kind? Sedimentary?
I toured the country once as igneous.
That was your name
for
a little bit?
No. But I toured the country is a good premise. I toured the country once as Al Dente.
Can you just do that? Can you just stop yourself?
He did.
You haven't seen one of my shows. I bail out of every joke. I'm like the volunteer fire department of humor. I can tell you people are not going to like this just by the way I cleared my throat.
I've never seen a guy, and I did stand up for a long time, and I've been a fan of it forever. I've never seen a guy purposely go in and try to sometimes not do well.
Sabotage.
You sabotage yourself sometimes.
Because I want to get into the paper. I actually left Chicago. I got prorated. I asked the club. The Funny Firm used to be a club.
I remember on Grand
Avenue.
Things
got nutty towards the end. And they papered the room. I don't know if you people know what paper.
They give away a lot of free tickets.
Free tickets.
Right.
And then it became, and I couldn't take it. And I asked them, I said, please allow me to leave a day early.
Yeah.
And that became my, what I was known for on the road.
Of a guy who ditched out a day early.
You don't have
early.
To pay me for the whole week. Book Andy Kindler. Maybe you'll save a little bit when he doesn't do the Saturday night. Everybody's a winner. The crowds and me.
But you've had shows, I'm guessing, at some point where you just go, this is a mismatch. This isn't going to work, right?
I'm trying to think of when it's ever gone otherwise. No. I do well. Why are you even implying?
I'm laughing so hard. You got me crying, and I'm not wearing waterproof mascara, and we have to do a picture. You asked, so that's what's going on.
Well, here's the deal. Here's the actual truth is that I do over-exaggerate even when I'm not trying to make it a bit.
Right.
Like, I don't know what it is I want the audience to do. I don't know if I want them to literally bust a gut. I don't know what it is that I would think would be good enough.
Right.
But them just laughing quietly is not good enough.
That's
for
not
me.
Enough.
I have to hear it. I have to hear a knee slap. Yep. I have to have a thigh crack.
A guffaw. Right.
Standing ovation.
Standing ovation. So I'm constantly on the audience.
Sure.
But I don't know if I would actually say I sabotage myself. I just think my material sometimes is not a match.
But remember how Johnny Carson was at his best when it wasn't going well? There's an element of that in you.
Well, that's what I'm influenced by. Yeah. And Letterman, too, did that. And Woody Allen did that. I love self-deprecating. Richard Lewis.
Yep.
I was very much influenced by that.
That's this show, too.
Yeah.
Listeners love when we screw it up, which is every day.
Yeah.
Well, I went to Australia, and I did the show there, and they loved every... It was almost like the country... That's the way the whole country is. They don't like it when you're too...
Polished?
Or ego-based.
Oh, really?
So anything time I made, like when I just a line like, I brought my B game tonight.
Yeah.
that big.
That work.
Huge,
they like that.
Yeah.
Why try hard? Just come in and.
Yeah. They like that. They like it. So that would be a good country for me.
Are you going to move there?
No, because they don't know who I am, and it would require me going there a lot to find out.
It's far away.
I've already got nothing going on here. Why
do it
over
overseas? You don't need that.
You could ride in a kangaroo pouch. Wouldn't that be fun? A giant one.
I didn't know you were so knowledgeable about other cultures. you got all your information about the world from Huckleberry Hound.
Yes,
I did. Is that still a reference?
Yes. Hanna-Barbera reference? Yeah. Sure.
I love the Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, me too.
I didn't care that the backgrounds never changed.
No, they were cheaply
Top
drawn.
Top Cat I enjoyed very much.
Oh, yep. He was the leader of the band.
Yep.
He was your own tip top. And now we will go back to references that none of you know. What about, remember when Philo T. Farnsworth first came up with the television? Who's with me?
We all are. We only have a minute.
Who am I, Ethel Rosenberg? Come on. Well, we only have two more minutes.
I know that you had a nice working relationship with David Letterman, and then he retired a year ago.
Yeah.
And then we just saw pictures of him about a week or so
ago.
I saw
that.
He's got a big white beard, and he's put on a pound or two, and he doesn't have any hair anymore.
I didn't see that he gained weight.
Yeah, you keep saying that.
I don't think he gained weight.
You don't think so?
He is absolutely...
The beard adds 10 pounds.
He's obsessive about weight.
Staying in
and
shape.
And he runs, like, miles a day.
But it looked like, because we hadn't seen him for a year, it looked like we hadn't seen him in 15 or 20 years. He looked really different.
He was making a face, though, in that picture, because
one jogging where he did look weird, and then we saw another one where he looked trim and
shopping.
Different. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
he had like
Jay
a giant
Leno,
strawberry.
He
go on say
his
it.
Idea of a. Well, I got nothing. I got to switch everything to Jimmy Fallon.
Right, you have to update.
Yeah.
By the way, while you were doing Jack Parr references, and Wendy and I were like, I don't think Jack Parr's working anymore, Andy. You got to update.
Jimmy Fallon. I can't even get my viruses to go viral. And this Jimmy Fallon, he does an egg and spoon toss with Cameron Diaz.
Right.
The entire nation of China downloads it.
Yep.
Everything is a viral video.
Everything.
That's how
is.
James Corden. Got popular.
That's so true.
To the degree that he's popular.
Andy, it's always fun to see you.
We
want people to come out and see you tonight, 7:30 at Space in Evanston. And then you have your own website, andykindler.com, with all sorts of word puzzles and things.
Prizes. Nothing ever
recipes.
Changes. My 2004 tour dates are still there.
Good. Have a great stay here.
How's Mr. Lindenson? Somebody wanted to text us.
Principal Lindenson was a character I did on the TV show Home Movies.
Yeah.
And Home Movies was created by the same guy who's now at the Bob's Burgers, where I play the voice of Mort.
Nice.
I know it. Somebody texted it. People love you.
That's so nice. I get recognized for my animated work.
How about that?
I look like Principal. Paula.
Oh, that kills.
I see. It's my voice all the time. They think it's magic. Paula.
It sounds convincing.
Hi, I'm Principal Lindenson. Not bad.
Not bad. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
I love you.
We love you
Space,
back.
Space, go tonight, Evanston.
7:30 show. We'll be right back. We'll find out what...